Hello, everybody. Welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on September the 23rd of 2015. My ruler of time, Thriller T. Chris, we have a lot of manga to talk about today, so we have no time for silly shenanigans to start the show.
We have no time for banter.
This will be the most robotic episode of Weekly Manga Recap ever. It will be fast and efficient, and we will be done within 20 minutes.
Wow. It's going to be like Toriko every chapter. We're just like, shit happened. Fucking Bakuman's back, kind of, I think. Just fucking the little girl did something. Fucking Nemu's dead. Boom, we cleared half of them in a minute. I did have a banter topic, but I'll save it for another time then. We don't have time for it.
I was just kidding. You can go ahead if you want.
Maybe it's not even worth talking about.
The mood's dead now? You don't even feel like it?
Yeah, I'm just like, no, it's gone. No, I'm just going to go to bed. Night. And I turn over. You're like, aw. But
I'm going to be like, if I start talking about the first manga, and then you're like, okay, let's talk about it, I'm going to hate you so bad right
now. Yeah, I'm like, Nick, now I kind of want to talk about it again.
can we not talk about Bakuman? It's a very wordy chapter, Nick, and not a lot actually happens.
Yeah, let me banter about Sesame Street instead, and we'll just go on to the next series. Black Clover, Bleach. Hey, why don't you wake me up when we get to One Piece? How about that?
Actually, you mentioned Sesame Street. We mentioned the Muppet Show last night. I actually watched the first episode of it after we were done.
How was it?
It was. It definitely had its moments.
Okay.
I think that I'm willing to give it a little bit longer, but some of the jokes were actually really funny.
So. Okay, well, that's good then. Is Kermit's Asian girlfriend annoying? Because
I think that they changed her significantly from when they filmed the pilot because she is southern as fuck in the first episode.
That seems strange,
but it's weird. Right. She still has the same exact design. It's just like, oh, Kermit, baby, I love you so much, honey, snookums and shit.
It's okay. They've not had much success with new Muppets, so I'm wary.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, the, God, what the fuck is that new, the new one?
Wally or Walter?
Walter. He was nowhere to be found.
I have to assume they killed him, or they were just
he's been strung up by his velvety insides in the basement or something.
He's like, he's a Muppet movie exclusive. He's like the Hulk in Avengers. We don't want to overuse him. We want people to still have a reason to see the next Muppets movie because they'll be waiting to see Walter again.
Yeah. Him and his whistling.
That was his character trait, wasn't it? That and being a fucking loser.
Well, the thing that bugged me, because I never saw Muppets Most Wanted, is the fact that, what's his name? The big celebrity that was in the 2011 movie? Jason Segel. The whole thing was the fact that he and Walter were brothers, and they were very close with each other, and also, you know, there was Amy Adams heavily involved in it as well. And then they're just like, well, yeah, but then they got married and they're gone now. So now you've got both of them are gone because their plot arc was completed and Walter is still there.
Well, yeah, because he always wanted to be a Muppet.
Right, without the two people that, you know, he played off of that established his character so effectively, though. Because other than that, it's just like, well, he's a big fanboy and that's kind of it.
He's the lame Bartolomeo of the Muppet world.
Can you imagine if Bartolomeo just showed up in a suit with no piercings or hair or
and very calm and reserved?
Yeah, he was a fan, but he would just kind of feel like, oh, it's Luffy, yay! And instead of a barrier power, he would whistle. Not even like super power whistle, he'd just go, you'll whistle a tune. You
know? Luffy, look out, there comes Pika! I'm like, this character blows! Why is he one of the seven captains?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Walter kind of sucked.
Yeah. Walter sucks. I'll save my banter for next week, though. Let's get to the series.
As much as I was encouraging you, no, you can do it.
It's like, we're like 7 minutes into the episode already. Let's just go.
So, we are going to hold on Kurihime. mostly because there are so many goddamn manga to talk about this week. Because in addition to the two Jumpstart series, there's a third series. It's another one returning from the past. It's Bakuman. It's a side story called Age 13. So we're going to kick off the recap, or should we do a manga recap with that? Because we do alphabetical order, and we have no Aardvark series to talk about instead. So there you go.
I had to stop. I was like, is there an Aardvark series out there?
Sure that someone tried it at some point, or at least made a joke about it.
I got pretty excited for it. I was like, oh, that'd be sweet.
So, for a nice bit of a change of pace, the Bakuman, the first chapter of the Bakuman Age 13 side story, which of course is about Mashiro and Takagi, when they were in middle school, presumably before they met or leading up until they really decided to team up and stuff, it actually primarily focuses on Takagi, because, you know, main series Bakuman was for the most part from Mashiro's perspective. So I like that we have mostly Takagi's perspective from this, and only occasionally do we see other characters kind of basically as they vaguely cross paths, and then we see them a little bit, what they were up to at the time, and then we go somewhere else, basically.
Mm-hmm. And it's worth noting off the top, the reason we're getting these Bakuman chapters, the reason they had them, period, is it's kind of advertising for the fact that the Bakuman movie is coming out in Japan at the start of October. So this is sort of a promotion for it to kind of, I guess, reintroduce the series to readers' minds and be like, oh yeah, Bakuman, that was awesome, huh? A movie, that seems strange as shit, but okay, I'll dig it.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what that's going to be focusing on, but man, whatever.
Live-action Bakuman movie. Yeah.
So, Takagi, like, there's a few moments here and there that are kind of cool. Like, he thinks that Asuki is hot, and he's like, oh, she's so nice, and then he, like, comes across Kayashi. I forget. Miyoshi, my mistake. Kaya Miyoshi is her name. And he's just like, I wish this girl was not in my way so I could stare at Azuki's hot ass some more, basically.
Well, he was like six at the... Not six, but he was not...
13!
I don't think he was like, let me check out her hot ass. He's like, I wish this ugly ponytail girl got out of the way so I could look at this cute girl more.
Basically is what he said. And also, Iwase is in it a fair amount because the guy keeps on getting better scores than her. And so... She's being fairly obvious about harboring a crush on him, and he is ignorant because he's a 13-year-old boy. You don't figure some, especially look, nerds like that, don't figure this shit out until they're like 20-something.
In retrospect, I go back in time, and I'm like, there was a girl who treated me in grade school and probably had a crush on me that I never really realized because she was very nice to me.
Yeah.
But I feel like even I, as dense as I was, would have picked up on this.
Will you shake my hand? And she blushes when he takes her hand, and then she whips it away because she's embarrassed, and then she runs off, and he's just like, what's with her? Why does she want to study together?
It's like that, and her awkwardly, like, let's, you know, we could exchange phone numbers, and then we could text each other at night when we get hard questions. He's like, oh, yes, that is a great platonic idea that we could just do.
And then we could, you know, study kissing. I don't think that's a subject.
He's like, bye. Biology's not until next year. But you're right, it would be a good idea to get a head start just in case a secret question shows up on the midterm. But again, platonic kissing. She's like, you fuck.
What a doofus. And it's like, because this happens, like, multiple times. It's one of the main focuses of the chapter is the fact that she's trying to get close to him, and he doesn't get it.
Yeah. I forgot until she showed up, too. I was like, oh, yeah, she was a character in Bakuman.
Oh, well, because they dropped her so hard when... Because it was like, oh, she and fucking Nizuma are gonna team up and take on Ashirogi Muto. And then they didn't.
Yeah, and then, like, that series quickly ended, and it was like, she... almost commit suicide. And you're like, oh, this is sad.
And then they're like, no, you want to say, don't commit suicide. Okay.
Yeah.
Keep on trying.
Credits.
Keep on trying, even though you won't succeed. Just like how fucking Aoki, basically, was like, keep on trying, even though you won't succeed.
There's a lot of failure in Bakuman.
That's why that whole thing about, I think that fucking, Oba doesn't like women came from, basically. another little biz, we see,
Hiramaru.
Yeah, I thought it was Hiramaru. And he's trying to sell English conversational tools to a public middle school. For some reason. he's just being a failure. A miserable failure, basically. Because this is before he decided to try making a manga and then hating his decision. So, that's basically
it. But he does get a Porsche eventually.
It's, yeah, I do like that they
foreshadowing
that
from the future.
Yeah, I do like that, where he's just like, oh, I'd love to have a car like this someday. And he's like, what kind of job do you need to have this? Tell me how I can get an awesome car like this! He's like, not even focused on, like, fulfilling work or anything, but just wants to be rich without trying.
The guy's like, I'm a manga artist! Right! And that's his motivation for everything.
And then, my favorite part of the chapter, Takagi gets inspiration to find a partner so that he can write a manga and they can draw it. And his inspiration is from Aishou 21!
It is actually pretty cool. I always love it when the series references other Jump series, and seeing Ice Shield get the big focus there is pretty awesome.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's like, it's not like they're going to reference themselves as the inspiration for it, because that would be insane dick-stroking.
I mean, they did in the first chapter of Bakuman.
They did, but it was just kind of like, oh, you have a Death Note there? But no, it's like, oh, wait, you know, here's, you know, Inagaki Murata, and there's these kids over here who really like this series, and that's where it gives Takagi the idea. Not seeing Oba and Obata have done a series together, but seeing another team that was successful at the time that Bakuman launched. So, uh-huh. It was a nice little nod there.
It is very cool. It was an okay chapter. I mean, it's strange. I was like, I wasn't ever expecting to, like, talk about a Bakuman chapter again. And it was, like, at the end of last week's issue, like, Bakuman's coming back for 2 weeks. I was like, okay. I mean, this isn't... It's all prequel stuff. It's not like... You know, next week's just a year forward from here, so it's not like, you know, we're gonna be like, what's Asuragi Muto doing in the future? Like, what's their new series like? Yeah, we're not gonna see that. So, I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know how much enjoyment I can grasp from it. Like, I'm like, oh, this was... You know, funny at points. It's cool to see these characters again. I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, I know what the point is. You want to get people to go see a movie, but I'm like, I just don't know what story gets told in this necessarily. Because it's not like we really got new information in this chapter. It's not like, this is like that, you know, epilogue in Lost that answered the question about what happened on the island after everyone left and Hurley is the new, you know, leader or whatever. It's like, okay, that answered something. But this, I'm just like, yeah, I mean, we kind of knew a lot of this information already. This is kind of cool to see them again, I guess.
It seems like the aim of this was, hey guys, remember Bakuman? Yeah, go see it.
Yeah,
as opposed to when we got the Naruto side series, it was, hey guys, you know, we're going to release this movie about Bull. And I know that's going to be freaking you out because, like, well, it's just not going to be about Naruto and Sasuke and stuff. Well, but they're going to be adults. And see, they can do cool stuff. And see, look at how awesome Sasuke and Sakura's daughter is, see? So, did a whole lot to, you know, introduce these characters and show what they were about and stuff. So then, you could be like, oh, well, there's a movie in which she is going to heavily feature, so maybe I should go and see that and see something new. As opposed to Bakuman is just kind of like, hey, remember us? Go see our movie.
Remember us? Yeah, that's great. Yeah, so I guess we'll see what happens next week. Probably nothing.
Yeah, probably. All right. Next up, Black Clover. Page 30, A New Rival. I hated this chapter, by the way. I thought it was so goddamn stupid. Basically, Yuno is just like, this spirit, Sylph, has been constantly sending me mana signs, but I was relying on my sight and hearing so much that I couldn't see them. So his super awesome detection ability, it's also not him. It's just this bullshit fucking Navi ripoff here doing it for him.
But it's because he's so strong.
You know, use Z to lock onto your target.
I feel like he is so powerful that he earned the fairy by the nature of him being so awesome. So, in a way, he earned this.
Right. So, the witch...
So I love the chat. Fucking Annalise in the chat's like, you're stupid, this chapter's great.
So, the witch, who still has no name, is like, oh no, giant wind Kamehameha wave! I better use the magic I stole to protect myself, and boo! And then we cut over to fucking Charmy, still stuffing her stupid fucking face. And she's like, oh, it's so good! And the cook is like, you're so awesome, shrimp! Eat it up! And all of his assistant chefs are like, what the fuck are those two doing still?
I'm actually curious who the chef is that's excited he's found a bottomless stomach for his food. Because you're always like, yeah, like, I want someone to eat my food, but, you know, I eventually want to get paid for it. I shouldn't just give you all of my food like the dumpster pit your stomach is.
I don't know. Maybe he's, like, the royal chef, so his paycheck is guaranteed, but he just likes... He's bored and wants a challenge and out or something. I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, he's like, oh, is there a stomach even I can't... Like, this is his God question. He's like, is there a stomach so big even my satisfying cooking couldn't fill?
I am way more intrigued by him than fucking gluttony over here. So, the witch bursts through the wall and is kind of just left there. And everyone kind of looks over like, oh, what's this? And they're like, oh no, a witch! And so the witch is like, oh, give me your mana! Or rather, but instead of just saying, give me your mana, she's just like, give it to me! Give it to me! And Charmy's like, she wants my food! And then she's like, no! You can't have it! And she tries to attack her, and Charmy just goes, I said no. And summons a giant sheep, which punches her.
I have to admit, I mean, I feel like she had done it at some point before, but I was not expecting cotton magic to be her gimmick. I was expecting, like, oh, there's something scary behind the seemingly, like, vapid young little girl who eats a lot. I would not have, like, if you gave me 1,000 guesses, I'd have been like, oh, of course, cotton magic. That's her big scary thing. I would assume it was like, oh, and I have devour magic, and there's a giant pit of nothing that comes beneath you, and you get consumed in years of 1,000 miseries. Yeah, she punches people with a big sheep.
Yeah. So she punched her, and seemingly defeated her, knocked her through the wall, but, oh no, she knocked her food through the wall too. Oh no. I hope she gets to eat her food, Chris! I'm so invested in this fucking character, Chris!
Oh man, Nick, are you alright?
And then you know,
I've had so much life drained from your voice.
And then you know, catches her food, and he brings it back to her, and she's so happy to have her food back that she falls in love with him, Chris. And then he falls over on top of her because he's drained and falls unconscious. Oh, but she makes sure to catch her plate of food, Chris. Oh, good.
Well, I also like that, like, he's collapsed on top of her and she's, like, some of the cloud beneath them. And she's like, oh, well, I guess I'm stuck here. I guess I better just eat. And you just hear sound effects of nom, nom, nom. Like, just the idea that she's trapped laying on her back on the ground, and she's... I just like to think she's just basically, like, beer-chugging this plate of food where she's just flipped it over and funneling it down her mouth. You're like, I have no humor in this chapter.
I think that to call this character One Note would be to exaggerate the amount of writing that went into her. Because a note requires usually more than one word. I this is like food. That is her character, food. Hey, food. All she cares about is food. That's it. That's the joke!
What if next chapter... It's revealed she also raises aquatic turtles in her off time and races them while teaching local children Spanish. so that they can so that they can compete on Spanish game shows for money that she will use to take over the Heart Kingdom. Boom, done. It ties into the overall plot now too.
That's so weird.
Oh, I'm just gonna call it out. Prediction for next week. We find out about her turtles and teaching Spanish to kids. I'm just calling it there. You know, you can write it down when it happens. Just know you heard it here first. I don't know why Spanish game shows. Stop asking me.
So, bizarrely enough, that's not the whole chapter. Apparently, that wasn't important enough to compose a whole chapter. I don't know. I think that, she was worried about losing her food. She'd feed the person who wanted to take her food. Oh, she almost knocked her food away. She got her food back to her. She ate her food. That seems like a good 18 pages worth of content to me!
I mean, if nothing else, you could definitely dumb some of the words down and you can make it a children's story.
You could make it a Bleach chapter, probably.
Yeah, add a couple 2-page spreads of her food.
So, Asta finally has started struggling against Eyepatch Dude. Because he has summoned a zombie that can fly, or hover, presumably. So, yeah, Asta can't reach him with the sword to counter with anti-magic blade stuff. Also, there is another zombie that has weird muddy water magic, which is countering both Noelle and the guy who proclaimed Asta his rival, whose name I've temporarily forgotten. So, they can't exactly move to help Asta very much. And so the guy tries to go in for the killing blow, but he is saved by a blast of fire as at last, pardon me, as at last Figolian comes in order to intervene and just fucking incinerates the floaty zombie thing. And he says to Asta, you know, I'm sorry that, you know, I interfered in your fight, but it would be a shame to let a man like you die here, so I apologize. And he says that he's kind of upset that Yami was able to foresee his potential better than he could, and says, oh, you know, you said you were going to become the Wizard King. Well, in that case, you and I are rivals as well. And he says, leave the rest to me. And summons this giant aura of fire around himself. So yeah, things got way better once, you know.
Yeah, Fuego Leon, I admit, I like him a lot. I know it would be weird to suddenly, like, Asta falls into a really long pit and breaks his legs. Like, I can never compete in this manga again. Fuego, you must become the leader of this series. And he's like, I guess. And then I'd be pretty stoked. Because he's pretty cool. He's admirable. He's kind of funny. He's inspiring to people. I like him. He's cool all around. I like he admits his fault in not picking Asta on the first day. So, good dude, that Fago Leon. I expect good things from him in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I did realize, though, just now, I finally got his name.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It took a little bit longer than I wanted to admit. Maybe. For somebody who's been studying Spanish a little bit.
Fire Lion.
Yeah. But now I got it, so I don't look like the fool anymore.
Okay.
I didn't mind this chapter. I think it might have worked a little bit better had the previous chapter... I think the end of this chapter, I had forgotten that Asta was in any sort of bad situation. So I think...
Right.
If we'd had a little, not cut away for the Yuno fight, it may have, stuck in my mind, and maybe the rest of the chapter would fit a little bit better.
No, I totally get you. We'd spent enough time focusing just on Yuno's struggle. I was like, what's Asta doing, by the way?
I thought he had won.
I mean, he was like, well, yeah, that's the thing. It's, you know, one of those... It's like watching wrestling, Chris, where one person is winning when you go to commercial break, and then when you come back from commercial break, suddenly the other person has the advantage. You're just like, wait, what the fuck happened?
He's like, well, what you didn't see.
Well, you better have the network or the fucking app or whatever in order to find out what happened, guys.
It's like, well, what you didn't see last week, in between Black Clover chapters, fucking zombie dude pulled out a steel chair, and when the ref wasn't looking, he hit Asta in the stomach with it, that cheater. Also, he has chair magic. It's weird. Zombie magic and chair magic. They're two weird magics that somehow combine sometimes. It's really convenient, though, because all the zombies will always have a place to sit. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah. Charmy sucks. Let's go to Bleach. Chapter something large.
643.
There's a sound effect blocking that four. It's very annoying. 643. Baby, hold your hand. 6. Waiting for love. Last time, Nemo was just like, I can be Superman with energy blast powers. And she blew up one of Granita's hands.
I thought you were making an Iron Giant reference, and I just like the idea of Nemu, right before she dies, is like, Superman!
But, of course, she blew up Granita's hand, which can just regenerate anyway. So it does that in this chapter, and then sends out giant burst of nerve endings, which spear into Nemu's back as she falls back to the ground, and then she just blows up. It's rather sudden, and her blood sprays everywhere around Mayuri and on top of him and stuff. It's rather disturbing, actually.
Honestly, this was the least disturbing chapter of Bleach for me in a little bit. I guess I've just been desensitized with the whole nerve baby eating an anthropomorphic hand. I'm just like, oh, okay, I guess this is what we're up to now. Also, Toriko's a thing in this magazine, and that one's been... it's been grappling the hold of weirdest, just disturbing manga for a little bit.
Also, like, body parts of hers go flying everywhere, and we see very clearly that her hand has been cut off. So, there you go.
Oh, you add one to the counter?
Yep. So, something very strange happens, because Mayuri is just like... apparently, I cared for Nimbu so much that I'm going to hallucinate Zanaparo to taunt me.
I do not grasp this in any way, shape, or form. Why Mayuri is so upset that he's like, I need to personify my anger at myself by conjuring a character I had very little respect for. It was like Kubo was just like, alright, I need to really rub in that we killed Nemu. But Pernita's isn't, like, that kind of character. So fuck it, I'll just bring Apollo back for 7 pages of crazy before I kill him off again.
I assume that the connection is the fact that, you know, Zeoporo did the whole rebirth from Nemu's womb thing, which seemed to leave her on the door to death, and then Mayuri's just like, no, I can fuck her back to life, or whatever the fuck I did. And so that is why, because, you know, Zeoporo is just like, oh, did you actually, care about her? You made a big deal about being a scientist and stuff like that when you actually cared about, you know, something like that. And so he is then projecting his feelings for Nemu into this, the one person who called him on actually caring about Nemu, seemingly, in the whole series. I guess that's the point.
Would it be really satisfying if instead of Apollo showing up to be like, aha, despair, craziness, I'm wacky, we just had Uryu show up instead, and he's like, good, now you know the pain of losing your family, fucker. And he kicks him in the balls in the credits.
Not even find out what happened with Jubok. Yeah, like, nope, Mayuri got his.
You guys can leave now. It almost felt like to me, they were like, ah, shit, Mayuri's such an unlikable shithead. Let's just throw in someone who's slightly more unlikable than he is.
So Mayuri, after literally 4 pages of Zeoporo just saying words, he just is just like, talk to the hand, and smashes his hallucination to the face, which then bursts apart for some reason. And then he's just like, yes, I can't believe that I had to be reminded of my negligence by a pseudoscientist like you. Okay, whatever. pseudoscience, does that mean that fucking Zeoporo was just like, oh, yeah, you know, if you unlock your chakras, it'll make you healthy forever or some shit like that? By the way, Mayuri, have you read my book, The Secret?
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it inspired Ryback.
Yeah, and look at him. He was the Intercontinental Champion.
Until that guy who didn't believe in it, that kicked his ass, so there you go.
obviously people who do that are Satan worshippers, so, you know, buy my book to avoid Satan.
Da-da-da-da. So, Bernita, for some reason, starts eating Nemu's remains.
I don't get this in the slightest, because, again, it almost, like, Bernita suddenly just became a different character in this moment, because last time we saw him, they're like, oh, he's evolving. He's grasping the reishi of people around him and taking on their personalities. So I don't get why, like, being surrounded by Ikkaku, Yumichika, Zarakai, or Mayuri would have him devolve into, like, some weird cannibal who eats people after he kills them. Like, it wasn't even like that was something he said he was going to do. Like, I'm going to eat you all when I'm done. It's like, he's like, I got a mouth. I better use this to just eat up myself.
Yeah. Like, we even see, it's not even like he's using his nerve endings to absorb her. No. In the middle of his palm, there's a mouth with eyes for teeth, and he sticks out this big-ass tongue and starts lapping up her blood. And it's just like, when did he... Is this because... He didn't try to eat Mayuri's Bankai before. He just blew it up. I don't get it.
It's very... I mean,
is it because he started to absorb information from Mayuri's Bankai, which likes to eat things randomly? Maybe that's it.
It feels like such... I feel like Kubo just needed a way out of this. And he's like, oh yeah, well, if he eats her corpse, then, he'll grow so much he'll die. And it's also, like, kind of a, therapeutic in a way. Like, oh, well, you become such a monster. You're eating corpses, and that's what gets you your comeuppance, ultimately.
I don't fucking know.
It's stupid, regardless, but it's...
So Pernia starts to eat Nemu's remains, and then Mayuri's like, okay, go ahead and do it. But I'm taking her brain! Whoop! And he explains, you're going to die now, because Nemu's pituitary gland has a compulsory accelerated cell division organ implanted in it. Basically, because the previous previous Nemuri experiments died, he implanted this thing to make sure that she would grow properly, and the thing that regulates it is the fact that the pituitary gland is attached to the cerebrum within the brain. So if you just eat that one organ without the brain, then you will constantly grow until you die. Basically, super accelerated extreme gigantism kicks in. So yeah, Bernita starts to bulge out and swell and stuff, and presumably, he's gonna die, maybe? I don't know.
God, I hope so. If this has been, what, 6 chapters alone on this fucking fight?
It's, yeah. Well, okay, so... Nemu is obviously dead now.
I have to hope!
I mean, it was rather sudden, wasn't it? Just like, bleh, she's dead.
Yeah, and I'd like to also think that he ate her body, and he's just like, well, and she grows back from your remains. That's the other thing it can do.
Well, that's the thing. I assume that Mayuri also took her brain back to somehow ensure that he could then, create Nemuri 7 Go. I don't know how to count to anything in Japanese. And then it's just like, and also I have the old Nemu's brain, so all the stuff she learned will be retained. That's the only thing I can imagine.
He puts it in, she's like, oh, you're a monster, Dad. He's like, so let's start on number 8 over here, and let's take out a few of those genocide memories.
I mean, I have to assume it's not just like, I have your brain now. Maybe if I give you imagination power, you'll be stupid.
That's the ultimate twist. Grammy was just Nemu's brain in a jar from the future. Come back.
We should write Bleach, obviously.
Yeah, no, this chapter sucked. It just doesn't make sense. The characters in it aren't functioning as they have been previously. The Apollo flashback doesn't make the slightest bit of sense. Nemu dying serves really no purpose, because I'm not going to feel bad for Mayuri, and I'm kind of like, I guess it's sad Nemu's dead, but I mean, I'm more annoyed that fucking Mayuri gets to live out of this. Like, it's just, it was a weird fight, and it's kind of a shame the way everything ended.
Well, and the big thing is the fact that they had the whole reason you're supposed to feel bad that Nemu is dead is the fact that you had that one chapter of flashback, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. And really, the only reason to really be sympathetic towards Nemu otherwise is because her dad's a fucking dick to her all the time.
Which was worked against by same flashback and events. So, good job, Kubo. I feel nothing.
And
talk about something else now.
Literally, this exact moment, the newest Fairy Tale chapter has finally gone live, so this will be a live reading for me, but I'm going to bounce around a bit, so we're not here forever. Fairy Tale chapter 453, A Father's Job, and Happy's on a scooter, who cares? Alright, so Lucy opens the chapter by... Alright, she's putting a shirt on! Okay. That makes sense.
She was already mostly dressed, yeah.
Yeah. We still have to get a shot of her putting the shirt on, of course. But she's talking about how we need to protect the guild against everything. We need to protect Mavis, because she's the one who built the guild. And without her, it'd all been pointless. And Natsu shows up, so she kicks him. Actually, no, she kicks the chair at him, and he just, ducks out of the way. And they're going to have some fun. Ned says, sure, I like a good punch-up, but don't get me wrong. What I like is pitting my strength against others. I don't like murdering people. Oh, it's almost a little bit like the line from the Captain America movie. Except not nearly as well written. ain't no feeling than gonna go at it with all you got and seeing who comes out on top, but this time it ain't gonna be like that. I'll do whatever it takes to win, because if we don't win, we don't come out of this alive. And Lucy responds to that by smiling, I guess. Seems like one of those moments you'd have a more somber reaction to it. Like, oh, he's going to give up his innocent love of fighting.
We're going to die if we don't win. Yeah.
That's our Natsu. let's see. Now Lucy makes a joke that when people say that, it means they're always going to die. Because when they talk about how happy life's going to be after it, they always die. Natsu says, Ignil told us to talk about the future. He said, that's the whole reason we go on living. And, oh god, there's a bat scene. Oh, Jesus Christ. There's a shot of Urza's ass. Just her bare ass. Just as hardly tastefully covered up by a speech bubble as you could possibly get away with without being porn. Oh, they're talking about strip poker. Oh my god. What? Alright, let me just try to read the speech bubbles here.
Well, Happy proposes they play strip poker. And Lucy is like, you're already naked, so what the fuck?
Wendy asks if Climb Sorcerer, or whatever the fuck it is, will be helping them out. And Urza is like, of course, it's a narc. Why wouldn't Gerard get involved? And Wendy's there. Come to think of it, I was the one who invited you two to Fairy Tale, wasn't I? And then Urza's butt shows up. And then Wendy hugs her. Oh, please don't give us a full page spread of that. Okay, we don't. Phew. That's very good. And Urza says, you truly have become a fine, upstanding wizard. You do our guild proud. Like that time you cut your hair. And the rest. Gray and Luvia make an indirect kiss joke.
Yep.
They still are non-committal towards the fact that they're going to be in a relationship towards each other.
Yeah, well, Gray is like, after this is all over, maybe we'll do something, basically.
I guess, yeah. He says he also has a secret plan of his own, though, as well. So just you wait, Zeref, and end. A bunch of random-ass Fairy Tale guild members no one gives a fuck about are talking to Makarov. Conventional wisdom would have them feinting the northern invasion while they land their main force in the south. This is really something I feel like we need a map to comprehend, because I have no idea what...
They're just kind of like using vague terms that aren't going to play a role in anything. They're just going to fight, whatever.
I'm like, you've never really defined the continent you're on very well, so I don't know what that means. I was observing everyone prior to the battle. They know the great danger they face, but they feel no panic. Well, actually, I at least observed Natsu, Gray, Urza, and fucking Wendy. So those are the only characters you care about, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Is that how you see it? Because I see them all showing their panic way down deep, gathering together with their friends to calm their unease and keep their spirits up. But that isn't a bad way of... that isn't in any way a bad thing. When a father shows fear, it's only natural for the children to feel fear as well. He has to stand in front of his kids, get really big, get punched and knocked out, and then they finish the job for him. That's a father's job.
And he can't act scared the whole time.
Yes, he may poop himself, which they will smell because the poop also gets larger with him. And then he gets knocked out and smashes into said poop and it gets everywhere. But that's okay, because I got really big and punched and then they finished it for me. Friendship. And Mavis responds with yes, with absurdly creepily huge eyes. And
don't play with us forever. Eyes. Like, it's really weird and off-putting.
There's a bunch of weird whooshes going on around as everyone's like, huh, what's going on outside? Actually, amusingly enough, Natsu and Happy are apparently playing strip poker, and Natsu's just losing because he's almost naked. And I like that.
Lucy's just ignoring them both. Like, nope.
Lucy had the sense to finally be like, no, this is not a situation you're just going to sexually exploit me in. I'm going to be over here fucking reading.
Whatever. We already know you look like naked. Who cares?
We see a bunch of characters hanging about, and this is something that was brought to me before, but if you look, Gajeel's in bed, and yes. You can turn and see Levy in bed as well, and it looks like the bed sheets are the same spread between them.
Oh, so, wow.
Bone shaka wow, 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 wow. Or they're like, nah, my bed's, your bed's warmer
than mine. Maybe they just went to the same, like, store to buy their sheets.
Completely unrelated. Like, she gets to his house, she's like, why do you also have the Star Spangled spreadsheets? Unicorn Stardust Parade spreadsheets? Like, they were really cheap.
That's actually a really good little tease there.
I do like that, actually.
They're not even, like, on the same page, so you gotta be looking out for it. Very, very well done, Hero.
And Mavis says, oh, no. Magrav, what's the scanner say about their power level? And he's like, yeah, fucking everywhere. 9,000-something. Why didn't it detect it at all? Where's it coming in from? Mavis screams for everyone to prepare for battle, because the enemy is attacking from air, approximately 50 flying heavy cruiser-class ships. What's so weird? Like, these aren't terms Fairy Tail normally uses.
Yeah.
Makarov says, oh, and that's only one small part of the Imperial forces. And Desert, the Geel, I think was his name.
Yes.
He's on, I guess, the flagship, and he's like, you ready to get pulverized, Fairy Tail? I'm gonna turn you into desert dust. What the fuck does that mean? He dropped the bullshit everything has to be about desert gimmick for like 6 chapters, and now it's back for one line.
Desert!
What the fuck does desert dust... Sand? Did you mean sand?
Oh, God.
Okay, so there are some cool little bits to that, by and large, a meh chapter.
I thought it was interesting that you had the whole, you know, the night before we go off to battle type of thing, and then suddenly, oh man, they attacked us in the middle of the night when we were caught off guard. It was an interesting idea in theory. I don't know about the whole execution of, look at the radar! There's all those ships that we didn't see! Apparently they have cloaking ability in a fucking magic battle series.
I'm like, doesn't, like, 3 members of Blue Pegasus have detection magic of some kind?
Yeah.
You tell me there's not one asshole in Fairy Tail who's like, yeah, my one thing is I can pick up on magical cloaks or something. It could work in some ways, like the sudden invasion attacking them out of nowhere when they're, you know, at their least prepared, but it's just like adding in the military war jargon at this point in time. I guess it's necessary, but it's just like, you're just speaking to me at this point. These Marines have no meaning. They'll invade the northern coast. Like, what northern coast?
You're on the coast?
Yeah, there's a coast here?
But, you know, I like, you know, the moment that we get with Lucy and Natsu, a little, to a lesser degree, the bit with Gray and Juvia, the less said about Wendy and Urza doing friendship naked hugs, the better.
It is great that they tried to have a tender moment, but Hiro's like, I haven't drawn anything naked yet in this chapter. Lucy was putting on clothes at the start of this.
I can't resist.
So they, of course, the only way two female characters could possibly connect to one another is for them to be bathing. They couldn't be out training. Urza, as the fucking, like, one of the military commanders of her guild, couldn't be preparing weapons or spells for war or fortifying defenses. Of course she's taking a bath with another female.
Who has to hug her around the waist?
That ass shot was obscene.
It was pretty amazingly blatant.
It is shameless to the nth degree.
Nth degree?
The nth degree. I pronounced the N really hard.
It's like double N.
Yeah. Thing. That's how specific of a degree it was.
It was weird because, like, it wasn't an incredibly eventful chapter. And we usually spend, I think, more time talking about Fairy Tail. And of all the weeks, there was like, I didn't, you know, read Fairy Tail until just now. Let's do a live reading. That was a pretty good one to do it because you're not really missing a whole lot. They hang out. You have three different conversations. Then the whole let's do this bullshit military talk, and oh, we're under attack. And that's basically it.
desert dust.
Pretty much. Oops. Anywho.
Food Wars.
Food Wars. Shook geek in the semen. Chapter 135.
Why was
the
it Scottish?
That was not any accent.
That sounded Scottish.
It was nothing.
All right. Fair enough.
So, we actually see that there was apparently a meeting of the Council of Ten to determine the whole giving power to Izami thing? Or maybe it happened afterward? I don't know. Erina seemed very surprised that her dad showed up, so I can only imagine that this happened after all six of them said okay.
It looks like this happened before it. Because they say with this, the matter's been decided, so that would presumably have happened before he walked around with the thing saying, like, and it's done. Hmm. Plus, it also shows Kuga and Ishiki reacting to this.
Yes.
And we see later in the chapter, Ishiki is making mention of the fact that he knew about it and all the proper channels were followed. Mm-hmm. So.
I do like how Kuga is not looking happy in that one panel we see him in. But, I mean, he's not, like, scowling or anything like that. He's kind of making him a bit like, I don't really know about this.
And we also see the third seat in that shot as well.
He's just kind of, like, you know, sitting up and not really, you can't really see him very well, but he doesn't look all that happy either. So.
I feel like that's, like, a quiet factor in things that won't be brought up until much later. But eventually it's going to play a factor. It's not going to put much emphasis on it now.
Yeah. But yeah, so it was determined that Izami was going to become the new headmaster, and Senzaimon was going to be ousted. And strangely enough, for some amount of time, nothing happens. We get narration from Megumi that says that, you know, they didn't know what Erina was freaking out about when they had shown up there. And they also had no idea at the time, but something terrible and momentous had begun. But daily life at the Totsuki Institute didn't change. Everything appeared to be exactly as it was before. Almost eerily so. Which, I mean, this was something that was very surprising to me. I figured that, you know,
his first thing would be to get up on stage and be like, anyone who can't pass this absurdly tough trial is expelled immediately.
Right, because that was the sort of attitude that he displayed when he stormed into Aaron's restaurant. Was just like, none of you guys are fit to eat this stuff. So it's strange that he is kind of biding his time and not doing anything immediately yet. Uh-huh. But we see some members of the Polar Star dorm talking about the news, and they're like, did this really happen? Did the Council Ten seriously, you know, agree to this? And Ishiki's like, yeah, you know, I never really thought that someone would go around ingrating himself with a majority of the Council of Ten just to get himself appointed dean. And so some of the other underclass were like, this is bullshit, I can't believe this happened.
Nick, I know some of these characters now.
Yeah.
I've caught up on all the English volumes of Food Wars, so I know the Polaris characters. I don't know their names, but like the guy with the haircut in his eyes.
You recognize who they are.
His specialty is smoking things. That's his thing. He's the smoking guy. And the girl with the buns, I forget what she does. But I read about her a lot. She's done things.
She's the ginky one.
Yeah.
And then there's the long-haired brunette.
Yeah.
With the boobs.
And there's the one we haven't seen, the guy with the glasses, who's just really smart.
He was just weak.
That was his thing. He's like, I'm not good at anything, but I study. I am the food academic.
And then he just comes in and then he like...
Oh, wait, no, she has like a particular... long hair girl has like a particular food she uses and everything.
Hmm. I don't remember any of these it's, guys because they haven't done anything important yet.
No, even in that moment, I was like, so much of this seems bullshit. But like everyone got like their thing of like... Oh, they made curry with this. This person is the smoking commander. Like, this person is the medical herb manufacturer god. And they think they're shooting an arrow.
Manufacturer god. Nice.
Like, they all have just these absurd titles. And she had, there was like one particular ingredient that she used in everything. Like some Japanese ingredient that was weird or something like that. And I think maybe the other girl was a pickler or something like that.
Couldn't tell you. I have to go back and read those things.
She ferment shit. Natto! I think that was it. She used natto and everything.
Huh. So they talk about this for a little bit, and Bunhead Girl is like, I bet this won't affect us in any way whatsoever, right? Doo-doo-doo!
I have a theory, but I'll just save it for the end of the chapter.
Okay. And Ibusaki then seizes on the thing that we were, talking about last time, which was, did Azami or someone come to Ishiki with this and try and convince him, and he voices this out loud, and then Ishiki's just like, oh hey, the ceremony's starting soon, so neatly dodges it as Azami goes up on this stage to present his acceptance speech, and he gives a very generic, very respectful and humble speech, saying, it's like, oh, this is, I've got very big shoes to fill, I've got a long way, lot to do, because since I'm on accomplished so much, this is a very important position, and I accept all of the burdens that come with it, and I will help the academy do well, I swear. And that's it! Like, he's not like, you've been, doing things wrong the whole time, and you got rats in the fucking kitchen, and that guy and be exterminated. He doesn't do anything like that.
And he's almost like wackily, like, nervous at points. He's like, oh, I really need a water. Whew! That was spooky.
Oh, man, yeah. Oh, I'm so parched. Oh, thank you for that.
Thank you for the water. Like, well, would you like to go, sir? No, I should go around. It's my duty to go around. The dean had so much on me. My only real advantage is being young and being able to move around. So let's go see everything. I was like, this guy's great.
And, of course, to the four people that we saw that he talked trash to at Arena's, are talking about him, and so the older man is like, we got one there, what the hell is he doing? This he's just being a snake. He showed us his true colors last night. And the two women with the like canned food, I forget exactly what it was,
they're the curry, I think,
right? They're like, no, he doesn't even realize that he tipped his hand or that he has one to tip. And he's like, they're like, what are you talking about? I believe that man has no intention of playing or pretending anything. His tirade that night, his speech today, all of that was simply him being himself. And her sister says, and that comes from his utter confidence that no matter what happens, everything is going to work out his way in the end.
I like to like think that the one guy in the audience who's like, oh, he seems like a really pleasant fellow, is then just immediately cut to his inner thoughts as he walks away, and he's just looking at things like murder, 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 murder.
But I do like that, it's not that he is a politician who's actually a douchebag. He just does his own thing, and that's kind of it. So, and then he goes to
as Arena. If you were like, maybe he's not such a bad guy after all.
He goes to Arena and she's like, you've done an excellent job, Hisako. And she's like, what are you talking about? Well, I'm really glad that you supported Arena while I was gone, so thanks. and I'm sure your presence was a great boon to her all these years. What do you mean, was? I'm relieving you of your duties. But I can still... And Arina tries to say, I want Hisako to... I want her to... It's okay, Arina. From now on, you will always have me by your side. Oh, he's so creepy!
Such a disturbing dude.
And so, yeah, Beep just says, you know, let's walk hand in hand, my daughter. Okay? And she's like, yeah, yes, father. And, yeah. I mean, it's one of those kinds of things where it's like, it doesn't matter if he ruins the Institute. It's, you can tell he's bad enough just because he is controlling her life, and you can tell that she can't rebel against him. Mm. So, that's, God, you can just tell so easily. It's such effective presentation through mostly the art, really. So, good stuff. And, also, we cut over to the Polar Star Academy later on, and, Miss Fumio, says, I think that, you know, this is just the calm before the storm. And, you know, basically, there's a tremendous amount of power within the Institute that is going in the same direction, and anyone who goes against the flow risks getting pegged as an enemy of the Institute. And any enemy of the Institute is an enemy of the Council of Ten.
Now this leads me into my theory on things. Because mm-hmm. They made a note, like, I wonder if they approached Ishiki about anything. I have to imagine Azami, when he approached everyone about this, essentially made some kind of deal with all of them, or put something out there with all of them in, like, a condition of, you know, should you make me the dean? And I feel like if he were to approach Ishiki, it would have had something to do with Polaris.
Right.
Because that seems to be the most important thing to him. Since he didn't support him, and that now he's on the council, I think that his first act is going to be either subtly or maybe blatantly, considering how he actually is, going after Polaris Guild and trying to...
I want to convert these dorms into a new, like, class building or some shit like that.
Or something where he's just like, I really want to test our students at the best of their abilities and bring out their best. Oh, but expulsion will be on the table if they fail, or something like that, and
to test this policy, let's have the Polar Star Dorms try first.
Yeah, I feel like he's going to go out to, because they made specific note, or what is her name? Fumio. Fumio. Notes like, anyone who goes against him is going to make themselves an enemy Institute and an enemy of the Council of Ten. So I feel like that's going to be the first target coming out of all this, because it immediately puts them a threat on Soma as well. Like, maybe he's like, what's the account guy name? The dude behind the fried chicken stand and all that. Izami or not Izami? Inamu?
Azon.
Something with an Azon? I feel like that, maybe he'll like send him after that or something like that. Mm. Just a theory I have.
Well, we'll see. And then we get a bit where Soma hears that he's got a guest, so he goes up to his room to greet them, and it turns out that it is Senzaimon, who is spending his time waiting for someone to arrive, flexing and admiring his biceps.
I love that he's like, oh, nice.
Even at your muscles!
Look, Nick, look, coming from a guy who's worked out, you know, there are times when you flex, and you're like, oh, yeah. I just imagine that when I'm, like, 94 years old, like, even if I'm still in that shape, I'm still not just like, I'm sweet. Look at this. Oh.
I like how there's specific notes, like, no, someone's used to seeing weird, giant muscle men do bodybuilding poses, so that's not what freaked them out. It's the fact that I guess they just found him in his room. I do love the reaction panel where he has to immediately dart behind the door to check the room number to make sure it's right.
That is pretty good.
Someone just says, you know, why'd you want to talk to me? And Senzaimon says that he was the one to convince Soma's father to send him to Totsuki. And he says, let us step outside a moment. I have something I wish to speak to you about. So, this is an interesting development here, and it looks like we're going to see some of the motivation for Soma, the true motivation, I guess, for Soma going to the academy.
Yes. It's very interesting. I feel like it's almost like My Hero Academia is like one chapter ahead on where Soma's going of like, sit down and let me explain to you all the events that are about to transpire going forward. But a very good chapter. I love the follow-up of seeing what Izami's like in person. I like seeing kind of these little teases of the threat he poses, and just, you know, a really interesting narrative going forward. So, very good chapter.
Let's move on to Nanofu.
Nanjuku.
Right.
Nick, I gotta start right at the top of things here. I mentioned last week, or last night, when we were doing the Q&A, we have a new female consultant on the show.
Right.
Derek is her name. I'm posing this to Derek. I have a question here. Why would a woman wear a bra with a strap that hangs down loosely like that? Because I feel like that would not provide much support, and it's confusing to me.
I don't think I think that for her breasts to be symmetrical in that way, that must mean that the shirt she is wearing is also providing support.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be. I don't know if they exist. Maybe it's a push-up tank top.
the straps are just for show.
Yeah, it's like those old pants they had in the early 2000s where the thong was on the outside, like peeking out. You're like, it's just for style.
Oh boy! Getting into the chapter proper, game two.
I want to also note, just so we're playing fair, Derek is free to ask us any questions she might have about men. Like the first one that comes, like, "Why are you all such pigs?" I'm like, "Touché." You nailed us.
So, Shinobu's a giant nerd, and he is studying shogi problems. And he's like, "Oh, and I've been solving problems all the time, and I've been reading up on pawns. I like this hanging pawn strategy. It is a pawn you drop in the hopes of promoting it to a tokin. It reminds me of myself, so I like the hanging pawn." Hanging pawn! He just repeats himself for some reason. I don't know. He's weird. So, pardon me. Yasukane thinks to himself, "I don't know about this," because he very suddenly decided he wanted to go pro, not really knowing exactly what he's jumping into. So I'm not sure if I should encourage him as his senior or tell him to check himself before he wrecks himself. What?
I hope that's his inner monologues at time. Just old fucking late 90s, early 2000s slangs. He's like, "This kid's gonna riggity-riggity wreck himself."
So then, of course, in perfect timing, he gets a call from Shinobu's father, who is like, he better not be getting into any weird habits up there. And so he immediately, Yasukane, like, swipes the shogi board away from Shinobu, and he's like, "Okay, stop it," you know, and he tells everyone else, "Look, you guys have to take responsibility, you know, don't just try him in and encourage him. You guys know what it means to aim for the pros," and Shinobu, you know, has no actual idea what he's getting himself into. And then, who the fuck is that? Is that the earphones guy?
Where? No.
The guy in the suit.
No, that's, it's the other kind of adult figure in it. We didn't see much of him last week.
We barely saw any of him. His name doesn't even show up in the introductory.
No, he was page. Just kind of represented as, like, the other older adult figure in the house. Huh. It was basically the girl, the headphones guy, the annoying one who's his friend, and there were two other people as well.
The older ones,
and
yeah.
He's the other guy.
Right, so they both get dressed in suits, and Yasukane, like, slicks his hair over and stuff, and they're like, "Yeah, they're going to, you know, the tests. They have to, you know, take this test in order to become pros, and in order to make it to Fourth Dan, they have to go, and there's only two people who get promoted every 6 months, so, you know, it's only four every year." And basically, you know, they've been working at this. Yasuke's been working at this ever since he was your age, Shinobu. He's been working his way through the leagues, aiming for the pros. And if you don't become a pro before you're 26, you can't anymore. it would, you know, he would have wasted his entire life dedicating it to Shogi for nothing. And so Shinobu's like, oh, and he took the time to help me out. Wow, even though he's got his own struggles and stuff. And like, well, I mean, he spent like an hour on you, dude.
He didn't break the bank.
Chill out on that. I mean, it was cool of him, but it wasn't like he was throwing his life away for you, okay? So they head off, and so then as soon as they're gone, basically, fucking Toilet King, guy who taught Shinobu a little bit, is like, let's play a game! And the other two are like, yeah, you're not going to play an even match with him, because Shinobu's a complete and utter beginner. So you don't need this, or this, or this, or these, or these. You get 10 pieces. You get your king, and you get your pawns, and that's it.
I'm going to break your hand, too.
And so Shinobu's like, oh, man, I can totally do this. This doesn't seem fair to me at all. And very shortly, he's like, I can't get to his king. And what? Oh, no! My piece got captured. Oh, no, he can use the captured piece against me! Oh, no! And he loses. Like, he just gets completely curb stomped. So they're like, see, you know, this is the difference between us, you know, and so on and so forth. And the other two are like, you're so fucking weak. And this guy's at the very bottom of the Shorei Association, so let that be a lesson to you. But Shinobu just says, no, that was actually really fun. And he's like, yeah, this is nothing like the puzzle I was doing earlier. I've got an actual opponent. And there's a great moment where, you know, they have this exchange where he's considering what to do, and he eventually gets tricked because a trap was set for him and he fell for it. But Shinobu's reaction is, this is a conversation. You know, before, he was completely unable to keep up with people. He would think too long while they were waiting for his reaction. But here, he's waiting for my answer. He's facing me with all his strength. This is Shogi. So, I thought this was a cool sequence, honestly.
Uh-huh. I don't think you can apply it to Hearthstone, though. That's like where my mind went when I first read it. I was like, he couldn't do it in Hearthstone. They only give you like 2.5 minutes for your turn, buddy.
Well, there's also, I'm sure there's like a time. There is a time variation. We saw them playing it earlier, too.
Yeah.
But he's not, the point is he's not pressuring Shinobu. Come on, do your next move already, asshole. Yeah. Shinobu employs the hanging pawn technique that he used earlier, and we don't really see exactly what happens, but, you know, he's, you know, repeating to himself, you know, oh, you know, if I lose the pawn, he only gets a pawn, but it can then become super powerful if it gets promoted. It's actually the strongest piece, and so on and so forth. And, eventually he manages to corner his opponent and force him to submit. And so he's like, I won! Ah! And the girl pinches his cheek and is just like, you know, don't get so obnoxious. You know?
Which is weird. I was like, you're kind of mean. He didn't even get to do anything yet. He was just like, I won! And then she grabbed him. I was like, oh, come on. You didn't even get to start.
It's like those refs who see you like, don't even think about celebrating. I see you haven't put the football down yet. You're thinking about spiking it, aren't you? 15 yards.
You're thinking about doing a dance, aren't you? How dare you have fun in this game, frap?
And headphones guy. Cool. Begins with a K.
Headphones guy.
Gets really pissed off and is like, no, don't get cocky because you won. That 10-man handicap means this match was nothing more than a joke. But if you learn some actual strategy, you might just improve.
Oh, he's the Sundare!
And Shinobu turns around and is like, scrolls a notebook. Use actual strategy. No, don't take notes! Which I understand is like, that's such a weird thing to take a note for. But what are you so upset about?
Yeah, I love that, one, he's angry he's taking notes, but then, two, he's like, use strategy in strategy game. It'd be like if he was like taking tips on football. Use athleticism to try and best opponent. Period. Circle, circle.
When trying to stop ball carrier, tackle them.
Score more points than they do.
Oh, boy. So, Yasukane and other guy, well, actually just No, he, the other guy does show back up. It's just like he's always relegated to the background. It's so weird. Yasukuni does show back up, and they all go out to celebrate because Yasukuni did manage to win, and he's presumably going to become a pro now. And the guy he went with is just like, well, it was just because your opponent made a stupid mistake. So that's the only reason you won. And Shinobu is like, I should apologize for earlier. And Yasukuni says, how'd it go? What do you mean? You played a bit today, right? He's like, no, it's okay. How'd it feel? He says, I had a lot of fun. And so Yasukuni says, you know, you should have quit if me telling you was enough to stop you. But, you know, I've done my duty. You know, I told you to stop, but, whatever. You didn't listen to me. Not my fault.
I'm gonna get that dirt off my shoulder. You're like, come on, all right, stop it. This gimmick's gone too far. You're like, I'm at 5,000. I don't like this character anymore, Nick.
So, Yasukuni has these brief little flashbacks of seemingly recent conversations he has had with people like, oh, you're not going to inherit the family business. Get out! I can't believe you're 25 already. Stop holding on to your childish dreams and stuff. Presumably showing that he and Shinobu have some similarities between them in terms of the way they're perceived by their family and peers and such. It's kind of blunt and not at the same time. It's weird. Mm-hmm. Just a very brief little aside saying, like, oh, by the way, this guy, you know, can relate to Shinobu. Anyway, let's move on.
I think we're going to find out from this that everyone in this society has some sort of issue probably with their family or some kind of, you know, dilemma. Like, something to ground them all and make them real characters in the same way. What's the main character's name?
Shinobu.
Shinobu. Like, the same way Shinobu does, maybe not to the same extreme, but everyone will have their plots, essentially.
Mm-hmm. It's similar, of course, in a lot of ways to Hikaru no Go. You know, they demonstrated this whole thing where it's like Hikaru had to dedicate a tremendous amount of time to Go, and then he had to take the protest, and there are all these people who are much older than him who were still trying to take the protest and pass it, and it was just like, if you don't, then you have wasted your life, basically, to that point. So, go get a job. So, Yasukuni basically ends the chapter by saying, in order to stand with us and become a pro, you're going to have to become the best in Tokyo first, and only then can you even stand at the gates. So Shinobu says, yes, I'll do that. And that's basically it for the chapter.
What'd you think of it, Nick?
I like this one better than the first one, I think. I like Shinobu's character more now that we've seen a bit more of his lighter side. And, you know, the bits where he's incredibly studious can be used as a joke. He's similar in some ways to the protagonist of Baby Steps, who did the same thing. So I like that he can be wacky while remaining consistent character. And I think that the dynamic among the entire cast is better in this one than it was in the last one, because there weren't, you know, here's the new guy, basically. So I like it better than the first one.
Yeah, well, I unfortunately didn't like it as much as the first chapter, but I feel that was sort of to be expected. I don't think it could have reflected as well as the first chapter did, just because the first chapter was almost like a standalone story in its own way. So this works as continuation, but there's not as much that I felt I got out of this chapter. It was sort of just the more explanation to what we already kind of got in the first one. And the shogi itself, I mean, it's kind of like Hikaru no Go, where you're like, if you really just took out the scenes of them with the shogi board, I wouldn't even realize they're playing the game, because there's no actual focus on any of the actual moves they're making or anything like that. But I think this is not supposed to be as much of a shogi manga as it's supposed to be a character-driven manga that uses shogi as the backdrop for it all. So to that regard, it's you know, it was enjoyable. So I think I put it on my top four this week when I did the jump survey. I think it was like my number three or something like that. So I still enjoyed it.
Let's move on now to My Hero Academia. Number 59, Listen Up, A Tale from the Past. We start with everyone in the locker rooms basically getting dressed back into their uniforms after the test that All Might gave them. And of course, Deku is thinking about, oh, you know, he seems so serious about wanting to talk to me afterward.
Hold on, wait. I also just need to make a comment on the cover page, because they've been doing these in the past few.
Where the character profile.
Yeah, yeah, and they've been on the female characters. And it's just like, you know, it lists little facts about them and then, like, points to some parts of their design. And I love it. It's Jiro's Jax, erotic. I'm like, really?
I don't know about that, man.
This is a fetish up for everybody. I've never heard of the headphone ear jack people. But fair enough. I guess to them, her ears would be very erotic.
They are. I don't know. They're tentacly, maybe? I don't know. But I think that there is a little bit of a fetish for, like, antenna over in Japan to some extent. So maybe that has to do with it.
Is there? All right. Fair enough. I'll go with it. I've learned to stop questioning fetishes from Japan.
Anyhow, speaking of fetishes, Mineta is being like, hey, Mineria, check it out. I just made the discovery of the century. Look, there's a hole in the wall here, just like in Shawshank. Which is such a great reference. It's a peeping hole, and he's like, it's like that escape tunnel from the Shawshank Redemption. Because it's hidden behind the poster. So, yeah, he's just like, our predecessors must have worked hard for this, because next door is the girls' locker room.
I wonder if the Shawshank reference is something the English team put in, or if that was actually, he says it in Japanese as well.
I'm not sure which of those possibilities I like more. But, yeah, he like, rips the poster off the wall while he's like, no, no, you shouldn't peek, Mineta. He's like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to look at Yao Yorozu's booborozus.
Who's Yao Yorozu again?
She is the busty one in the background.
Okay, the paper girl or creation girl. I forget what her magic is. Or not magic, work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think I know who all of them are now.
And, you know, he even, like, says, like, yo, I want to see Ashido's sexy silhouette and Hagakure's floating panties. Such a giant pervert. And he, like, names all of them except Kyoka, who stabs her earphone jack through the hole into his eye.
So, like, he, like, devolves eventually, and he's like, and a Sui's surprisingly decent boot, and I was guessing he was going to say booty, I don't know. He gets stabbed before then.
I love the fucking things he says. Yao Yorozu's booborozus, Ashido's sexy silhouette, Hagakure's floaty panties, Uraraka's positively ooh-la-la body, which is a great play on words with her name, and Asui's surprisingly decent boob. It's so fucking funny. I love it.
And I love that in the next panel you can see them in the girls' dressing room. And I just love that I didn't even notice it the first time I read through, but the fucking invisible girl just has gloves on her hands. I saw her. She was holding up her hands for fisticuffs. Like, she's like, I was ready to punch the shit out of her.
She's covering her chest just like Suyu's doing right in front of her. And then Kyoka's just like, he didn't even mention me.
It was his next one, and Jiro's the super erotic ears.
Maybe he was gonna say Asui's surprisingly decent bodacious relationship with Kyoka or something. I don't know.
Bodacious relationship.
Oh god, it was such a weird way. I had no clue that at the end of the last chapter we're going to start this one, and I thought it was so fucking funny.
It is a very amusing start to it.
Oh, God. Anyway, then Deku goes to have a super serious conversation with All Might. And we learn a lot of stuff from this. A lot about the ways that powers work, the origins of One for All, and how they're related to All for One, and so on and so forth. Basically, All Might explains, hey, I know that Stain licked your blood. And he's like, yeah, he did. He used that to, you know, use his paralytic ability. But do you remember what I said when I gave you my power? Yeah, you said, eat this! I didn't mean that. I like how he has this, like,
All Might face.
Perfect representation of All Might's face. But he said, no, I said that it doesn't matter what it is you eat as long as you get my DNA. So Deku's like, do you mean that the Hero Killer has one for all now? And he says, no. And I want to explain that because you figured you would be worried about it. Basically, one for all can only transfer it if its holder wills it to. Though it can't be stolen forcibly, it can be given to an unwilling recipient. And the way he explains this is as if he were given obligatory chocolates, even though he didn't want them. This is such a weird series.
It was a strange explanation, too, because I was like, who's the chocolate in this situation? Who's he supposed to be?
Oh, God. So he says, you know, that makes it a unique quirk with a unique origin story, because One for All was originally derived from a different quirk altogether. All for One, a quirk that lets its user steal other quirks as well as grant quirks to others.
Now, Nick, you grasped the difference between All for One and One for All?
Well, one is the thing that you say at the beginning of the Three Musketeers motto, and the other is the one you say at the end. Basically, All for One is hoarding, and One for
greedy,
All...
greedy, yes.
Yeah, and One for All is giving. So
that's the memory cue, everybody, on how to remember it. We all come up with silly memory cues to help us remember things. For example, when I was studying the periodic table of elements back in grade school, we had to memorize all of them. I remember that SB is Antony because SB I memorized with SpongeBob, and Antony stands a lot like Anthony, which I said was the name of the kid who drowned in the ocean saying he was going to go look for SpongeBob. And a horrible logic behind it. I never forgot that Antony was SB on the periodic table of elements. So, just keep that one in your back pocket. Both of them you can keep in your back pocket in case it comes up in the future. Carry on.
The one that I hated was... we were taught, in order to remember the occipital lobe, what its functions were, it begins with OC. So you could go, did you see the OC last night? Like, but I didn't watch the OC because I had, you know, taste when I was a teenager.
You were like, fuck this. You loser teenage shows.
So I went around looking for, you know, anime that started with OC or some shit. I don't know. The idea being that the occipital lobe deals with vision, so.
Ah. Interesting.
So even though I never watched the OC, remember that.
There you go. It's always the weirdest memory cues that you can keep.
Yeah. Or like kittens prefer cream or fish, generally speaking.
Oh, was that size?
Kingdom, phylum.
Oh, animal. Okay.
Yeah. Down to genus species, yeah.
I know.
Or like, please excuse my dear Aunt Sally.
PEMDAS, which I always slightly remembered because... No, actually, that doesn't even make sense. I was like, I remember it because there was a robot character in Vigilante 8 who had the name, and I was like, his name was Dallas. It's barely like PEMDAS. It's the name of something else completely. Why did I use that as my memory cue? It doesn't even relate to it. God, you were stupid, Christopher.
Oh, God. Anyhow. Oh, pardon me. Shit. So the guy who had All for One basically took advantage of the chaos that emerged when people first, developed quirks. And so he essentially stole quirks from other people and used his power to spread the influence of his organization and even took over all of Japan and became a true lord of evil. So All Might says that he could also instill... power. He could grant quirks, but sometimes the load was too much for those who received it. Many would end up becoming mere puppets, unable to even speak, just like those Nomu. So now we see a potential explanation for where the monsters came from. Maybe not necessarily exactly the same, but a similar origin related to him. And, also, there was one case where his granting of a quirk resulted in a mutation of blending because he had a quirkless younger brother. The brother was small and fragile, but he had a strong sense of justice, and the deeds of his big brother pained him, so he opposed the tyrant. But but the elder brother forced a Power Stalker quirk on his brother. We still don't know whether that was out of kindness or if it was to force the younger to submit. And so Deku immediately is like, wait, do you mean... He says, yes. It turned out he hadn't actually been quirkless from the start, though neither he nor anyone else had known it. He possessed a totally useless quirk, one that let him pass his quirk itself onto others. But then the Power Stalker quirk and the transferring quirk were fused. That's how One For All came to be. Interesting.
It's very cool. He explains it right afterwards, but I love the fact that it is, basically it's a, that story of good and evil being cyclical. One can't exist without the other because it essentially creates the other, where he's like, justice is born from evil. And I love that that's actually the fact here. The older brother trying to put some sort of, opposition on his younger brother has ultimately created the greatest tool against himself. It's a very cool kind of origin story for it. And actually really ingenious and creative, too. Like, I love the notion. He's like, oh, no, the younger brother had a quirk. He just had a useless one that just passed his quirk on to other people. And that's the combination.
And did absolutely nothing else.
Yeah. It's extremely, creative and brilliant, actually, to just combine them together. It's like, oh, you gave a really satisfying explanation to this. You're not, the Maze Runner at all. You didn't create a world so complex that there was no possible way you could explain it. Well, you did it brilliantly. God, Maze Hunter sucked.
So, All Might says the older brother, could acquire any kind of quirk, even ones that could stop the aging process. And he did, making him a near-immortal symbol of evil. Given the man's indefatigable strength and the state of society at the time, his defeated younger brother decided to pass the mission on to future generations. Though it was but a shadow of what it is today, the power he passed on grew and grew, all in the hope that it could one day stop the older brother. And it was my generation that finally brought the villain down, or so we thought. He survived, and now he's on the move again as the brains behind this league of villains.
Never eat soggy waffles. North, east, south, west.
Why wouldn't you just do news?
Well, that's not how I was taught, Nick. I was taught never eat soggy waffles.
I mean, you shouldn't.
Well, it was a great life tip as well as being a useful memory cue.
Anyway, so All Might explains that, basically the power of One For All is meant to be used to defeat All For One, which means that someday you will probably fight against that ultimate evil. And so Deku's like, yeah, I'll do my best. I'll step up to the challenge. As long as you're by my side, I can do anything. And All Might is like, he thinks to himself, I've got to tell him. Yeah, thanks.
At the same time, probably when that day comes, I won't be here for you anymore. It's what he wants to say, because he sees a panel of him trying to start saying it. It's actually a very heartbreaking panel where he just can't pull it together enough to come out and tell him that he's probably going to die before it ever comes to pass. And the background fades away, so you just really see the shot of the two of them sitting across from one another. It's very tragic.
It's, so it seems as though All Might is not long for this world, because I guess that's just the nature of, One For All, is that it is meant to be something that is passed on to other people, which means that in order to complete the transfer, the old one has to basically completely die. So,
yeah. Which is a bummer.
Yeah.
Also, this is something they talked about on the Shonen Jump podcast as well as other places, how the quirk essentially has been getting stronger. They were the idea of that, people just are learning to use it better, and that's why it's getting stronger. I also thought, couldn't it also have been an aspect of the original guy's quirk that when he passes it along, it gets stronger with each person
through? The original intention was that he would, be a wealth of power, presumably for the original brother to then leech off of. So, presumably, as it gets passed along, the original strength goes towards the new person who has it. That's what I interpreted it to mean.
Yeah. So I think it's a cool little aspect, too. Like, every person keeps getting stronger and stronger.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, we go back to a bit of more of a lighter subject, as back in the classroom, it's announced that everyone's going to be going on a summer training camp in the woods. And I love the different reactions that people have, where, you know, it's like, Ashio's like, truth or dare, and Mikhail is eventually, or just immediately like, bathhouses!
He's shaking, with excitement, screaming bathhouses. Like, I mean, like, fucking Ida's like, oh, yes, curry. Like, curry, yes, that would be enjoyable.
Open air baths!
Baths, everybody! There'll be hot springs! Like, you only get there if you pass. Do your best, girls! Like, you're such a creepy little pervert, but I guess since you're 13, it actually is okay.
Like, everyone's just like, yeah, let's do our best so we can all go. And it's just like, do your best, girls, because I want to see all your tits!
Badasses! Like, I just want one scene in the future where, like, they're at the camp and he sees a bathhouse and he just starts frothing at the mouth.
And then, to close things out, we get a glimpse of the person with All for One, who just has a little bit of a conversation where they say, man, it kind of sucks that the person who had super hyper-regeneration wasn't around when you really needed them, because they're completely worthless once your wounds had already healed. And he's like, it's fine. I know that boy will rise to the occasion. He was born twisted. And referring to hand-on-mouth guy to do his dirty work. And we see a little glimpse of his face. He's got scars, like, all up in there. Like, it's weird to tell exactly what is going on with him, because I think he's got a breathing apparatus that's he's taken out of his mouth, but there's also, like, one going into his throat, and, like, a something feeding like stuff into
IV
his neck.
Into him. Yeah,
and his entire upper face is scarred over. It's pretty gross.
Horikoshi is particularly versed at creating disturbing looking villains. He really has a talent for like making them like just distinct and visually like, oh, that's like an unnerving and creepy yet cool design.
Mm-hmm. And he's just kind of like wearing a suit, basically.
Yeah, I do like that.
So he's like, you know, says, oh, you know, enjoy this while you can, All Might, because you know, this transient peace of yours will soon end, basically. So, yeah.
Good.
Another effective villain that we've gotten in the last few weeks from Shonen Jump in general.
Yes. Very good chapter.
Whom we don't really know very much about yet. Okay.
One Piece. Chapter 800. You want me to take lead, Nick? You seem like you need a little water.
A little bit, yeah.
All right.
Also, in Nisekoi, Marika's mother doesn't love her. She's kind of a bitch. Moving on!
We'll see you next Tuesday. So, I just want to note on the cover page for this week, it's Sanji trying to kiss Robin, suggested by, quote, I feel like Law's reactions are getting more exaggerated, unquote, from Saitama. I love that that's what someone actually submitted as their name. Luffy starts off by doing what a lot of people expected and refusing the drink. He doesn't like the taste of alcohol, and everyone's screaming.
Which is weird.
It's actually not so much. Luffy's always been a meat guy. He likes food. So it actually kind of makes sense that he's just like, eh, I don't really care about alcohol. That's always been Zoro and Nami's thing. But he's like, nah, I don't really care about it. And everyone's screaming, like, it's not for the flavor. It's a very symbolic thing. And you know, Luffy explains, he's like, yeah, but then I'd have to be the master of this big fleet, wouldn't I? Like, I don't want
it. Bartholomew was like, yeah, and you'd have an armada of 5,600 at your beck and call. You'd be an incredibly powerful pirate.
And Zoro's like, nah, stop bothering with that. Why don't you just pour stuff into a mug and I'll taste it and I'll drink it. Like, it's not for the taste, it's a ritual. And Roland always explains it. Like, it's, you know, it's, how can this power not be enough? This is the strongest navy out there. You know, there'll be a time will come when you'll need this. And Luffy explains, like, it's not me. It's, you know, it's going to cramp my style. I don't want that. I just want to be king of the pirates. I don't want to be some big shot. And, like, I love the reactions that everyone gets.
Yeah,
like,
all of them tilt their heads, but some of them tilt their whole bodies. And you see, you've got the four regular-sized guys all, you know, kind of lined up. Orlumbus is behind them, slightly bigger. The giant's behind them. You can't even see if he's doing the same reaction.
You just see a speech bubble with a question mark in it, so you assume he's doing the same thing.
And then Leo right there in the foreground also tilting his head.
And then it cuts, and Zoro's literally just drinking out of the sake cup with his fucking hand. And Usopp's just like, use a cup!
And Robin's like, hee hee.
I want some! Luffy explains, he's like, look, if I ever think we're in trouble, then I'll shout for your help and you'll come to save us. And, like, I don't have to be your boss or anything like that for you to, for that to happen. And if you're in trouble, you call for us and we'll come and help you. Like, you know, it's what we'll do. We'll be friends. And Bartolomeo says, like, oh, I get what you're saying. To Mr. Luffy, being king of the pirates doesn't mean being big, but free. And he starts crying because he's like, oh, I get it now. Which is actually kind of cool in the sense of, like, oh, not only is he a huge... one, like, Straw Hat fanboy, he actually kind of gets his mentality the quickest of everybody as well. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind
of cool. And he's also trying to learn from Luffy as well. Mm-hmm. As opposed to just like, I think you're so awesome, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, he's inspired by him, and it's cool seeing that. But then they start hearing a cannonball fire, and they're being attacked. And it's not the Navy, it's actually a rival pirate crew that was in the area that, I guess, had some kind of deal with Doflamingo. So they're like, well, now we're going to ransack the kingdom and get King Riku to pay the debts. And there's a line Orlumbus says where he says, have Columbus take charge, we're still busy here. And I was like, one, I don't think we know who Columbus is. Two, it seems weird for you, whose name clearly seems to be inspired from Christopher Columbus, has a secondary commander called Columbus. That seems confusing. But everyone is essentially crying. You know, Bartolomeo's like, oh, this is great. And Hadrian is just laughing. He's like, what a great speech. Or what a great, you know, mindset. Give the speech anyway. It's fine if he doesn't drink it. And they all agree that it doesn't matter. They don't need Luffy to drink it. Just in the same way he will refuse their offer and keep going about things his own way, they're going to do things their own way as well. As is happening, the ship is getting attacked. Fujitora drops a lot of the rubble that was hanging, debris, and crushes the invaders who are attacking. He says, that there's a pardon gift, Straw Hat, because he's a cowboy for whatever reason they made him. And the seven new captains all sit down and they swear an oath that says, as followers, we hereby swear to become both the shield and spear of our boss, Mr. Straw Hat Luffy. In recognition of our debt to you, we seven do give our lives to take these sun's cups and drink them in your honor. And they all...
I love the picture of all of them sitting down with the cups, because the cups are the same size for all of them. So Hadrian's got to delicately balance it between his fingers, and Leo's just like using both hands to hoist it up in front of his mouth.
It's larger than his head. But they all drink deeply from that. And everyone starts celebrating. Luffy's like, hey, I haven't drunk any of my wine yet, and somehow it's empty. And Zoro's just licking his mouth and wiping away. So presumably he just drank it all during that. But Sai explains, he's like, this works just fine. You be the way you always have. We swore our loyalty on our own, that's all. And if anything happens, we'll risk our lives to get there on our own. No harm in having folks like that on your side, right? And he continues trying to explain things like, so I'm sure you could certainly keep our seven names and faces in your... And Luffy runs away because there's food. the characters all start, you know, like, having a little conversation with one another. Bartolomeo's, like, on his hands and knees.
I'm so overwhelmed!
He's so happy. But narration starts popping in with, Sunny with a high chance of falling rubble. On this day, the seas around Dressrosa experienced a most uncommon type of weather. And they go back to the Navy, and they're like, oh, well, sir, the rubble's finally falling. And Vice Admiral's like, oh, good, that means the Straw Hats are wiped out then. And you're like, well, no, they're kind of missing.
What?
And we cut over to Fujitora's like, I don't have the right to chase y'all. I'm hoping to keep this under wraps, but for clearing up the government's mess, you have my utmost thanks. And
he smiles. That.
Yeah, and then fucking Son Goku's like, heard that. I'm like, oh, shit. We cut away really quickly for a little last scene with Rebecca and Cryos, where he's like, ah, it's good that they got away. I hope we see them again. And Rebecca grabs her dad's hand. She says, is it my hand warm? He's like, ah, yes, it's very warm. And she's like, are you crying again? He's like, no, I'm not crying.
I'm not crying.
Then we cut back to a ship, and all of the Straw Hats who are there and the seven new commanders are partying together. Maul's also there. Baby Five, you can actually see her there as well. They're all celebrating, clashing cups, having their victory celebration, and the narration kicks back in again. Throw the very odd practice of Sun's cups and forces unexpected out of their control. Seven odd and mighty warriors labeled themselves the followers of Straw Hat Luffy. After this moment, they will each grow in power until they eventually cause a great incident of historic proportions. But for the moment, that is a story no one knows about. Very cool chapter. I love the narration there at the end. I love the tease of like, oh, these guys are going to be doing something huge. You know, it's like, oh, okay, so Bartolomeo won't be a Straw Hat. Fair enough. He's still going to do something in the story. All these characters are not just like, oh, there'll be guys walking around following. Like, there's some role that these characters are all going to play in the story. And this is actually something that now, when I go back and read those volumes back then, I'm going to be able to read those fights they had with a lot more like, oh, like, Hadrian having that scene where he fought, you know, Mach Weiss is going to mean a lot more now. And I'm really excited about that. And I just love that we got this tease, because I really do feel like this is going to be something huge. Because the last time we got something like this was when Blackbeard fought Ace. And they mentioned that this was the catalyst to a huge event. And they teased that. And that eventually became the whole Marineford arc. So I feel like we're going to get something huge out of this. And I think it's extremely awesome.
Yeah, it was big. It was good. I liked the real feeling of scope to everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just the amount of dedication that was put towards this very small, really, ceremony. And I like the way that the characters go off of each other, where, you know, the seven commanders were all like, Luffy, we want to pledge ourselves to you. I don't want you to do that.
Like, hold him down and force the water down his throat. We're drawing wine down his throat.
I don't want to drink this alcohol. No, it's so that you can become our, like, father commander, basically. Like, I don't want to do that. Why? Because I don't want to. It's stupid. Well, we're going to fight you anyway. Go, 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 go.
Two of them were like, we're going to force it down his throat and lose. I was like, that's not very follower-like of you guys. But I love this chapter. I gave it my chapter of the week in the Jump series. I think a lot of chapters this week were very good. This was even one I thought was great. But I really enjoyed it. Great. And it's a big chapter, too. 800. I mean, it's a milestone chapter.
This feels like a milestone chapter because it marks a tremendous change in the status quo, because Luffy is not just the captain of a group of, you know, 10 pirates. He's technically the commander of a tremendous fleet. That's a tremendous change for him.
And there's all these new characters who are like, oh, these are going to be factors going forward. All of these guys are going to play some kind of role. You know, it notes them, all seven of them. So
very it's a little bit like, you know, the introduction of, you know, forces like the emperors or like the supernovas and so on and so forth, saying like, hey, here are these important guys. They're going to play a role later on. So. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we'll move on then to
Jumpstart!
Summon the Summoner.
Yeah, it was weird. I looked at this
Majin Tante Samo the Summoner.
I looked at this title and I was like, Salmon the Summoner. Now I want fish. And I was like, how am I supposed to pronounce that? I assume it's Summon the Summoner. But it's weird because, like, I'm a summoner named Summon, basically.
It's a very wacky title.
We start not with Salmon, but with Sakura Teshigawara, who is just a very proper high school student. But at the start of the chapter, we get some color pages explaining that this is the story up to the moment right before I fall into hell. As she's being accosted by a spirit telling her to sleep more, she comes across Salmon, who is basically riding around on a giant ghost dog, and
I think I'm also being hunted by this spirit, Nick. The spirit of just go back to sleep.
The go back to sleep spirit, basically.
Yeah, I must have pissed off a gypsy at some point, because that's me every morning. Like, your bed's so comfy. Why wake up? I'm like, well, I have to go
sleep
to work.
Sleep more!
And it's like, if
go
you
back to sleep!
If you go back to sleep, that money to pay for your house will come back somewhere. I'm like, makes sense now that you say it, even though it doesn't.
Basically what happens is, Teshi Gawara is like class president. She's very popular in school because she's always helping people out. People say she's like an angel, and they make a joke about like characters in her name and stuff. Her big act that got her attention was like in the last year, they were on a school trip. The guy sitting next to her was sick and needed to throw up, and she actually caught his puke in her bare hands to help him out. And
I actually found that very funny too.
Yeah, and all she cared about was like, "Do you feel okay? Are you right?" And they're like, "Oh my god, he's so gross or anything." And they're like, "Wow, I can't believe that she is so incredibly selfless. She's got the heart of a Buddha and stuff like that." And she's just like, "I just want to help people out. I'm not really that great. Come on."
I just catch vomit from people.
Basically, she is a good person.
Yes.
And so Salman joins the school, is the new student. She reaches out to him and is trying to invite him into stuff. He actually asks her to light the roof of the school, which is, you know, very stereotypical, oh, place for a love confession. And so she's freaking out. I was like, oh my God, is he going to confess to me? I have no idea how I'm going to deal with this. What am I going to do? And then he's like, "You're like an angel, Teshi Gawara. I hate you." And I love that she keeps this same really cartoonish expression on her face throughout the entire rest of the page every time her face pops up. It's a great little touch. And but he basically just says, "I like people who are greedy, and I hate hypocritical people who don't show their bad side. And I'm going to use my summoning powers to summon spirits that will push you into showing your bad side." And then he proceeds to spend the rest of the chapter being a dick. Someone's a dick.
Yeah, like, if we can go back to the Q&A from yesterday where someone asked us our least favorite shonen protagonists, he would be my least favorite one because he's actually actively a shitty person.
He is not charming in his shittiness either.
No, like, the series gets a lot of, like, comparisons to Nagami Neru. But at least in Nogami Neru, even though Neru was also a sadistic fuck from hell, he was still working against other evils that were more human and, I guess, unjustified in being evil.
He had selfish motivations, but he wasn't, like, tormenting people deliberately.
Except for Yako. He tormented the shit out of her.
Well, he screwed around with her, basically. But it wasn't like, "I'm going to turn you into a demon and drag you into hell with me," or something like that.
I think he may have threatened her. My point was more so the fact that I was like, at least in that, Neru was stopping criminals, where in this, I mean, it's only the first chapter, but Sammo's just an asshole. Like, there's no villain he stops. Like, a demon shows up, and he destroys it, but, like, you know, that's an abstract evil of, like, a demon shows up. I'm like, you're still the dickhead in all of this. We need something evil. Like, you're not an anti-hero. You're just a villain who happens to be the protagonist.
So, like, yeah, this demon shows up and starts to attack Teshi Gawara. And he's just like, "You know, some demons really hate me. But it looks like this one's targeting you. Well, maybe it thinks we're unfortunate allies or something. Oh, well, I'll leave you to deal with this. Bye!" And so she has to run away from it for a while. And basically, she can't really do anything because she's, you know, weak little human. And she, even when she is at the moment where she thinks she's going to die, we specifically get narration that says, "My mind flowed with all sorts of emotions as I prepared for my death. She apologizes to her parents because she left before them. She apologizes to the class and says, 'You know, select a class president to replace me and, you know, elect one without fighting. I hope you all get along. When the new year starts, you know, no one wanted to do it, so I just volunteered. Oh, I wonder if everyone's going to be sad because of this. I wonder if my, you know, girlfriends are going to cry for me."
And we cut to her family being sad.
Yeah, she doesn't even think, never does she think, "I don't want to die." She thinks, "People are going to miss me, and that makes me sad." And then she thinks, "Oh, and someone's, well, he's probably going to be glad that I'm dead. And if he can react with more than 3 words, that'll be pretty impressive. So goodbye, world." So it's like, this isn't like a person who has a secret dark side that Saman knows about that he's trying to kneel away at in order to expose her bad side. Because there have been stories like that where it's like, "Oh, you're really a bad person, and I'm going to expose that side of you." Because
everyone, has a bad side or something like that.
And so he says, like, "You're a good person, so I have to make sure that you survive long enough for me to show your evil side. He doesn't even say something like, I'm going to make sure that I corrupt you and turn you into a bad person. He's just like, no, you're actually a bad person. Which he's not! He's such a dick! I don't like him!
He really is just an asshole.
It's like, it's not funny either.
It's kind of weird too, because I guess if this was meant to be a pure comedy, maybe I could get the joke in that of like, oh, he's, you know, he's going to be cruel and sadistic to her because he's going to prove that she's an evil person, but he's a fucking just a mean person because she's not actually evil, and that's like some of the comedy there within. But I don't feel like it's, I feel like it's also trying to be, one, on one hand, a battle manga, and two, on a scary hand, maybe even suggest romance between them at some point. Because he's like, I don't know, he seems very attached to her in his obsession, and he kind of pulls her in.
There's other people in the world who act like good people when you, all the time, you know?
I'm not going to say the series is bad. We're not, I guess, technically done discussing the chapter. But
he basically, there is a weird sort of cheap trick that he does, where basically he has to draw a summoning circle for every spell he casts, whether it's to summon a spirit or it's to use an offensive spell. So his main attack is this will-o-wisp thing where he launches a small fireball. And so he uses that to attack the demon, but it's like, well, that's not going to be very effective. So I use the copy machine in order to print 100 copies, and as they're being printed out, they're immediately triggering and doing a barrage to destroy the demon. And then he says, you know, I will protect you from all the demons that come to attack you until you become an evil person. And then Tetsugaru is like, as I said at the start of this chapter, this is the story that goes right up until the moment where I fell into hell. So presumably, at the end of all of this, Saman will somehow get what he wants, which really pisses me off.
I really
don't like this.
it's tough.
It's like, it's well done. I just don't like the main character.
It's a premise that's really... Here's the thing. I didn't even really like Neru for the most part. And the Neru was a better done version of this. Like, it's still one of those things where it's like, if you're really going to have, for what's, for the most part, a nice, innocent, likable lead who is going to be constantly, essentially being, you know, like, maybe not physically in this manga's case, but at least mentally tortured by being attacked and, like, essentially being preyed on by demons and him the entire time. It's just not very enjoyable unless there's something else going on. Like, it is, there are funny moments to the chapter, but it's like, this is so, like, dark, but not dark enough that it's okay. It's just uncomfortable.
And it's weird to start to figure out, is he, like, a villain protagonist? Are we supposed to be rooting for him to destroy the demons accosting Tishigawara so he can eventually corrupt her and turn her evil? I don't know if I want to see that story.
Yeah, like, it's just, if it was, like, a different story and, like, oh, he's this figure above her trying to do this, and there's, like, oh, but, like, a boy classmate, or, you know, it could be your name, it could be anybody, another classmate's like, oh, I saw this happen, and I'm not going to let him do this to you. And, like, it's still a comedy, like, it's still, like, oh, can you stop all the wacky stuff I'm going to do to prove she's secretly evil, and it's these two characters trying to, like, fight against this kind of asshole? I could get behind that. It's just weird having him as the lead figure in all this. I think it's the final panel that just puts me in a weird place.
Where he's leaning over her kind of possessively.
Like, it's definitely like almost like a very romantic, like, pose. Like, it's almost like he's swooping and pulling her in.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah. That's the part of the relationship that would bother me the most if it pushes in that direction at all.
50 Shades of Summon Circles.
Yeah. So Toriko had stuff happen, and
I can't even keep up with this anymore.
I can tell you my base logic of this, the explosion went off, and somehow Tepe protected Zaus. I don't know if anyone else survived, but from the fact that the explosion went off, Zaus's mind control that was on him is apparently worn off, and he's a good guy now. But there's no time to care about that, because Joey teleports her and Midoriya to somewhere else.
Just Midora.
Yeah, just Midora. Sorry. It's not Deku, unfortunately. And they're going to have a fight in the back channel, and she's like, stupid humans, they don't understand what they are, they called us the fucking back channel idiots. It's actually the warp kitchen, and time flows slow here, and blah, 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 I'm an evil monster, and I'm gonna make you shorter, and, you know, everything weird, but just be a moment. Midori's like, you think my anger is momentary? No, I did blah, 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 I'm gonna eat my full course. I'll tell you what my full course is as a parting gift. And she's like, let me hear your death course from the death, from your death throes. Which is like the idea, it's like she stabs him and he's like, popcorn! Clam chowder! Italian wedding soup! She's like, that's two soups! You can't have two soups on your menu! Oh, no, God. That's my drink!
Why does there have to be so many of these?
Double baconator! She's like, oh, you're... menu's gross as shit. Stuff that doesn't match.
The thing Jiro fought, he launched it into space.
Mm-hmm. And Jiro talks about, yeah, it's pretty tough. So they're all going to have to really combine together to fight again. Like, they can't pull any punches. Then we see a really creepy shot of Acacia eating a bunch of nitros. Uh-huh. And I guess he's crazy, or I don't know exactly. And then we finish with them saying, like, we gotta stop him before the full course makes it there, because if he gets that strong, then nobody will be able to stop them. The only one who would be able to stop them at that chance is the gourmet demon that was inside Ichiro, which is Dawn Slime, who is currently, I don't know if he's actually with Komatsu Group. They was at one point. So I guess it's interesting, the idea that the demons within each of these characters could actually become, like, physical, tangible beings in the real world.
Well, it's like when when Toriko fought with the horse.
Horse, yeah, and his hand actually became the demon's hand.
Well, no, it became the demon with him. Oh, that's right.
So yeah, they can actually, I guess, separate completely though at some point.
It's weird.
It is very strange. Toriko, I've just lost so much of, like, it's just so out there, and I barely can follow along with it each week. So let's talk about World Trigger.
Mm. Right. Chapter 116 of World Trigger, Yuichi Jin, Part 9. Last time Osamu went to Jin and said, I want you to join Tamakoma too. So Jin starts this off and says, isn't this kind of too much? You know, asking an elite agent to join your squad. And Osamu says that he looked in the rules and you can have up to 4 people on a squad. Adding or removing people during rank war season is allowed. And he even consulted with I always forget her name, even though she always shows up. Uzami? Their operator.
Yeah, I know it, and I just blanked on her name.
Always blank on her name. I really shouldn't, because she shows up all the fucking time. Anyhow, so she's like, you know, if you add a person, then usually it takes a while to smooth out the teamwork and stuff like that. But, you know, squadmates drop out or get replaced for, you know, all sorts of reasons. So, yeah, this happens all the time. And so Osamu's like, you know, and you're a free agent now, so it's okay to recruit you. And also, you know, you have your side effects, so I figured there wouldn't be any point in me, you know, making small talk and beating around the bush and stuff like that.
Shiori, that's it.
Right. I think I always try and remember her other name.
Usami.
I think that's it? Yeah. I think I said that already. Damn it. Fuck. Lost my cred. Anyway. So, presumably, a bit of time passes. They sit together on the roof, and Osama's like, you know, we lost, and I felt there's this tremendous barrier at the top of the B rank. There's a horrific difference in the strength and experience that we have as a team that, you know, that those 3 squads we went up against have over us. But we can't risk losing anymore, because if the next away teams are going to be decided soon, we only have a few matches left. If the gap gets any wider, it's going to be impossible to get promoted to A rank in time. So Jin says, you know, it's like, you know, take it easy on yourself. You know, you guys are a rookie squad. You know, squads never basically make it to A rank this quickly. You lost, but you've proved, you haven't shown your full potential yet, and Chika made a big leap forward in your match, so if you don't make the away team this time, you're going to get another chance. You'll make it there. And yeah, Osamu says, yeah, Karasuma said the same thing, but we actually have to, because Kuga doesn't have much time left. because his body is only a temporary form created by the Black Trigger. His real body is slowly dying, and I don't know how much time he has left. He might have a year, he might have five or longer, but he could have way less time. We don't know. So I want our squad to go on this away mission so that he can see Replica, and we can't lose anymore if we're going to do that.
It didn't at the moment, but the way you're narrating, it's making me start to want to cry, Nick. I'm like, it's so sad. He really wants to let Yuma see the Replica again.
I think that the real thing you should be like, maybe we should go and find a way for Yuma to not die.
It's weird. I'm just going to mention this to anyone who's listening, because I really think it's a good deal. They do bundles on Weekly Shonen Jump, and right now through the month of May, you can get a bundle for all the digital volumes of World Trigger and Siren. I think they also have a Siren sale as well, and you can get all five volumes of World Trigger there out for $20, which is
that's not a lot.
That's not a lot, and it's a very good deal in that regard. I picked it up. I highly recommend it, if only because a lot of the side info Ashihara puts in his series is very hysterical. Like, his commentary on these characters and why he designs them is great. But I'm at the point in rereading those volumes where I'm about to get to Yuma's backstory, and, like, you just forget how tragic it was, like, to have that revealed. Like, wow, you actually finally grounded this character. And by the way, Nick, we shit on early World Trigger a lot. Going back and rereading it, it's not that bad, actually.
I don't know. I think I'd have to actually look at it again.
I can still see there are flaws to it. Like, I'm glad they dropped the whole, Yuma looks at Japan. Like, what is this Japan thing with your paper money and your bullies? Like, that thing they thankfully dropped. But there is, like, kind of unique little bits to it still. I'm like, this is okay. Now that I've seen where this eventually goes in the series, going back, I can dig this.
So, with the explanation out of the way, Jin's like, oh, I understand why you came to recruit me, but no, I can't join you guys. There are other things I have to do right now. I can't take part in the team rank wars, I'm sorry. And Osama's like, yeah, I'm sorry that I asked so much of you, but Jin says, look, you shouldn't blame yourself for what happened. What happened to Professor Replica? Weird terminology.
Well, now that I'm rereading those old chapters, Nick, he calls him Professor Replica all the time. It's weird.
Weird. You know, it wasn't your fault what happened. And Osama says, you know, Kyuga said the same thing, because Replica did all that to save us. And Jin says, no, I actually mean it's my fault that he's gone. Because, you know, with the side effect of Foresight, I saw multiple futures during the large-scale neighbor invasion. And when I found out they wanted to capture agents, I could have let Chika escape early on, but I chose not to do that, because the more the enemy focused on Chika, the less likely they would have damaged the city. So it worked out in that respect, but you almost died, and Professor Replica's gone. It's basically my fault because of the decision I made. Which, then it was something that flashes back to what his mother said when he woke up after the battle, which was, you know, Jin came and kept on apologizing to her and Chika. And it was like, oh, wow, he's been kind of shouldering this guilt the whole time. That's interesting.
It's one of the cooler aspects of Jin's character that doesn't get touched on a lot, thankfully, that his power is extremely awesome, but by seeing these different scenarios and by making himself the one that decides what happens, he's the one who has to, you know, shoulder the burden of the guilt of any decision he makes, because he knows what the other outcomes would have been.
Mm-hmm.
So I like seeing this little aspect of him kind of coming forward with how much guilt he's felt for what almost happened to Osamu and that.
And he says, you know, I owe you guys a whole lot. And he promises that he'll help them out when they get in trouble, but he just can't at the moment. Oh, and one more thing. About recruiting for Tamakoma 2.
One more thing!
Respect your elders, Jack. I fucking love Uncle Chan. Okay. Anyway, he says, if you want to recruit someone, there's someone better suited for the job than me. I don't know if they'll agree to join, but that's all I can say. Your forte is recognizing your weaknesses and doing whatever you can to overcome them. So think carefully in this search. Good luck! And Osamu, you know, before he leaves, says, you know I almost died, but you've helped us so much, so I don't think you owe us anything. And Jin kind of smirks to himself and says, I figured you'd say that.
very cool moment there. I've turned around on Jin. He's very cool. I dig him now. And I like this scene. Before we finish up, I want to ask the question, do you think that that mystery person he's considering is still Hyosei?
I think that that is, at the very least, the obvious choice. There could very well be a swerve that occurs, but it seems like it's probably going to be Hyosei.
Is it too obvious that it's Hyosei? Do you think it's almost like a red herring that he's putting out there? And he's like, no, I meant fucking Kandera, I had the guy's name and I forgot. The sniper from Miwa Squad. Kandera, what, fuck.
Well, and that's the thing about it, is that I highly doubt that there's going to be a case of squad jumping that occurs.
And there's not many free agents that we know of.
Right. So I think that, unless it's Yusei, there's going to have to be a very good explanation for it, basically.
I like the suggestion of Bartolomeo from Tomokomite. I'm way behind. He's a very great defense member.
They're like, dude, your barrier triggers are so good. How come you can't muster any Trion for any offensive attacks?
I can summon it around my fist and punch you. It's still a barrier, though. Shut up.
Where's Mr. Luffy?
Yeah.
Anyhow. So we cut to later on with Osamu having met up with Chika and Yuma. They're like, look, Osamu, we're making our signature faces. Cheer up, leader!
Do they actually say that? No.
No, okay. I feel like they should, though.
It's weird, though, because, again, if you read the collective, if you read the volumes, Ashihara makes references to a lot of this stuff, so it's at points...
Ah, Yuma, the master of the duck face.
Like, I'm like, he's self-aware of some of this. Like, fuck, there's one, it's, it's Kandera again! The sniper in Miwa Squad, he comments on the fact, he's like, this guy actually kind of seems a lot like Osamu. So I think at some point the two of them are going to have a competition where the loser either has to become a delinquent or reveal themselves as gay.
Oh, what the fuck? Oh, wow. So anyway.
Definitely read those volumes, guys. Great deal.
They also have, like, Yonkoma in them, I think, too.
Yeah.
So Osamu says, look, we can still make A rank if we try, you know, because Chika and Kuga, you know, you each got 1 point. Chika escaped and Kuga got 1 point, then the match ended when the timer ran out, so we lost, but it wasn't by much. And looking back at the match logs of the top B rank squads, it seems like a lot of them try to let the timer run out against Ninomiya and Kagayura squads, or try to escape, which means that they're powerful, but it's fortunate for us, because while the top is competing with low scores, we can rack up our scores one match at a time. So, nice little way of looking at it, which is like, the top squads can't pull far ahead because everyone plays so cautiously against them that they don't give them a lot of points.
Mm-hmm.
So, interesting. And then Osamu, of course, is probably thinking to himself, then we need another person before we can make the top again, but who would be more suited than Jin for us? And then we cut away to where Jin is talking with Kazama, and Kazama's like, he tried to recruit you? God, I don't know if he's got balls or he's just a greedy asshole, basically. But Jin has a better, you know, way of looking at things, which is, you know, no one else would actually think to follow through on that. So maybe your advice that he should do his job as captain worked, huh? But Kazama says, you know, I think he was trying to be too extreme with his movement, but it is nice that he was broadening his outlook more than just, you know, improving his own skills. And he's like, oh, you know, it would be kind of funny to imagine you following his orders. And Jin says, yeah, that sounded like fun to me, too. But an elite agent is in great demand. And they walk through this corridor into this meeting room where most of the top agents are all gathered. Like,
Hashiyama's there, Miwa, Tachikawa, Commander Kido, the tiger guy, his assistant, the lead operator, whose name I've also forgotten, and I think the guy with the long black hair, is that Azuma? Azuma?
I think that's Azuma, yeah.
Okay. I always forget, he's not A-rank.
Well, yeah, and it's a little difficult to place him because he's not wearing his usual stuff. He's just wearing, you know, like
clothing. Yeah.
So
Shinoda, I know he would be there because he's like one of the oldest members of Border.
Mm-hmm.
But I just had to like, I was like, is it him or am I just thinking it's him? But it's a pretty important group there.
Yeah. So Shinoda says, "All right, let's begin the emergency response meeting."
Very interesting. Emergency response meeting to what
going
exactly?
On, what's going on here? But World Trigger's going to be off next week.
Bummer!
Which is a bit unfortunate, but I think that we're at a little bit of a good break point because we need a little bit of time, I think, to soak in, oh god, you know, Tamakuma lost big time, and you're going to you know try to be adding someone else, and Border as a whole has got these you know, operations going on that you know, that go on outside of Tamakoma. So it's also nice to you know be, have a little break to be reminded, hey, you know, we've been doing these rank wars, but they're doing them for a reason, and it's because you know they're getting invaded by neighbors. They want to go to the neighbor world and stuff like that. So whether or not Tamakoma rises to the occasion, the organization is going to move forward with or without them. So.
Mm-hmm.
So, and not an incredibly eventful chapter, but some interesting bits of character development, and also some moments of intrigue, where it's like, oh, what's going to happen next?
Yes. Very, very cool chapter. Very good overall. I'm excited to find out what happens. It's a bummer it's off next week, but if you're looking for your World Trigger fix next week, get those bundles before it goes away. It's to the end of September.
Awesome. Now, Chris, did you read Yu-Gi-Oh! Arc 5?
I tried, Nick.
You tried?
I really tried. If the plot wasn't confusing, the game has gotten so confusing to me that I was just like, you might as well be playing with Dual Kingdom rules at this point.
Well, that's sort of what happens, especially at the beginning, where they're like, oh, here's the action field. And it's like, yeah, very Duelist Kingdom, where suddenly the terrain has a tremendous effect on the duel. They actually simplify a lot of the rules for the manga, because they say there are four special cards around the field you can gather. You can only get one per turn. So it's not just like people constantly running around and gathering these things like they do in the anime. And yeah, basically what happens is like, hey, wait a minute, that's not the guy we're after. It's just a guy with a face that looks disturbingly like his. And then they're like, but Sawatari, go duel him anyway. And it's like, okay. And then they duel. And also we learned that apparently Yuzu has some sort of bodyguard-like job that Yuto is fulfilling for her, it seems. I don't know. Yu-Gi-Oh! Manga, since the original ended, have always been kind of weird. And they always, it's very awkward to watch a duel unfold in a manga, especially because they're very, very fast and loose with the way that things go.
It's just, I sat there and I was like, I summon this thing, well, I destroy it. Well, that, or no, I play a card and that activates an effect and I destroy it. And I summon this fusion monster. And I'm just like, wait, don't people do Frankensteiner anymore? or Robosteen, whatever the fuck its name was, sacrifice 4,000 health, summon a fusion monster, summon Red Eyes or Blue Eyes Ultimate Dragon, and use it for one turn kill. Is that not a thing anymore?
Not really, no.
No.
But actually, interestingly, because one of the things that tends to happen in Yu-Gi-Oh! Manga is they will use it as an opportunity to change ace monsters and as a way to, you know, sell more cards. Like, oh, here is a manga interpretation of this character's ace card that they use in the anime. But Yuto just summons his regular ace monster from the anime. It was a little bit surprising.
Like, look, we don't have time to do a second fucking artwork design.
I'm lazy. I'm just going to draw this.
Yeah, how about it's the exact same thing. Congratulations, everybody.
Yay! Basically, the way that the duel goes is that Yuto gets pushed into a corner. He's got like 200 life points left. And then suddenly, Yuya arrives and he's like, hey, let me be your opponent. That's kind of it.
Yes. It turns out he is secretly the guy they were looking for all along or something.
Yes, that is the case, correct. So I have no idea how this is going to really go. Yu-Gi-Oh! Manga can be hit or miss in terms of how they interpret the worlds that they do a different version of. For example, the GX manga had some very interesting ideas. The 5Ds manga actually had some weird ideas because like some of the characters have just like completely different roles in how in terms of how they fit into society and stuff. But I've never really stuck with a manga in Yu-Gi-Oh! Before. So maybe if we just do a little bit of touching in on this every now and then.
Also, maybe on a week where we don't have two other jump starts going on.
Right. This is why I just, like, very quickly ran through it.
Yeah.
Also, one last note. The manga, rather, Shonen Jump Online, advertises an exclusive to one of the tins that they advertise that you can buy. It's called Elder Entity Norden. And if you're up to date on your Yu-Gi-Oh! News, you know that they're advertising this and trying to get you to buy it when it's going to be banned in about 2 weeks. So good job, Konami!
Like, look, we want to sell you on this super awesome card. It's kind of too awesome to be used, though.
Yeah, that's basically it. Like,
get this sweet Yado Garasu tin.
What do you mean it's been banned for years? No!
What do you mean spirit decks aren't a thing anymore? Fuck you!
Actually, they released some support for spirits a couple of years ago and made them relevant again.
Ooh.
Yeah. They do that occasionally.
Is Inaba White Rabbit a thing again?
No, because that card doesn't fit in with the way that spirits work.
Damn. I have viciously hateful memories of fucking Inaba White Rabbit because my friend Frank played one.
You think you have vicious memories of that? My friend would constantly play it in conjunction with shit like Gravity Bind.
Yeah, no, I think I got to that combo too at some point.
It was like you would use White
Rabbit, fuck you. Like, you shit.
You would do like Gravity Bind, Lava Golem, and then Master of Restrict, so you couldn't even tribute the Lava Golem for something else, so you were stuck with it, taking 1,000 damage in your turn, and then Inaba White Rabbit jumping over it to deal 700 more damage each turn.
I fucking hate Inaba White Rabbit.
Inaba White Rabbit is like the worst thing in the world. It is one of my least favorite cards ever because they killed me so often. Anyhow, that is, I think, going to do it. We'll close on a Yu-Gi-Oh! Card rant, I think.
Again.
Yeah. But yeah, thank you everyone who joined us for the live recording of Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show normally Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, although sometimes we do need to change things up due to our availability. But you can follow us on Twitter. He's at RoloT. I'm at YRuler of Time. And, Chris?
We now have a Twitter specifically for Weekly Manga Recap. You can get it at WMR Podcast. And there'll be tweets for whenever there's going to be episode changes. I'll try to post on there when new episodes come out. And I'll also I'll be over there posting up some more manga-related nerdy tweets. That way, my followers who don't care about manga don't have to be inundated with them as constantly as they might have otherwise. Hmm. So, go over there for some amusing manga humor as well, sir, as some updates.
And, of course, you can also check out our past episodes either on iTunes, or you can check them out on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. If you check us out on iTunes, be sure to, of course, leave a rating or comment so we can beat those woodworking podcasts.
The fans came in, Nick. The listeners, they came in.
After we guilt tripped them.
Support. Three solid reviews from Racer Nikki. This is great, great manga discussions. Hilarious and overall just awesome. Keep it up. We got one from Marvelous Mr. D. He says, Rolo T writes amazing erotic fan fiction and some cases on the show, which is far superior to the erotic fan fiction written by the Woodworking Podcast, which is pathetic considering they should be experts on wood euphemisms.
Yeah.
And from Phoenix03, who says, WMR is an entertaining, enjoyable podcast that never fails to provide great laughs, spelled with an I for some reason, and insight on weekly Shonen Jump manga every week. So thank you very much to all three of you. It is greatly appreciated. Only with your support can we beat the woodworkers. I can't stress it enough. It's only... We're like Smokey the Bear, and we're pointing to... We're like, only you can prevent... Woodworker Podcast for being the number one on iTunes.
The slogan kind of has to get crammed in towards the bottom of the poster.
Like, yeah.
We should have really tried to, you know, practice brevity with that, but we were too lazy.
Yeah, and I was really more enamored with how good I look in the Smokey the Bear hat. I was like, I should have been a ranger.
Oh, God. Be sure to also send us criticism, ask us questions, and leave suggestions for future manga for us to read. Send them to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com so we can check them out. Also, you can check us out on Patreon. It is thanks to your continuing support that we are able to do awesome bonus stuff for the show. For example, the Q&A show that we did last night. And also, we do a bonus episode. This month's was on sports that need a manga, in which we devolved into insane ideas because Chris had prepared very interesting pitches for manga for that could have been prepared on those bases.
It's a mix. Some of them are very silly. There's at least a premise in all of them, though. So it's not pure parody, but there are some absurd attachments in some of them. Not going to say what, just going to say some of them may involve the fucking comic character from the Take On Me music video. That's all I'm going to say. You'll have to listen to find out how he fits into a sports manga.
We also like to extend special thanks to those of you guys who help prepare extra stuff for us. Our title card is Steve Man. You can find him in so many goddamn places now. He's got, like, another Tumblr, and he's on Twitter now, too.
So he's hard. He's been to on up. Twitter.
Ah, shut up. Also, special thanks go out to the Infamous Planet and Felix Dark for preparing the visual editions of our podcast. Thank you guys so much.
And a shout out to Adrian L., who is our newest patron. So a special thank you to you, Adrian, for supporting on the show. It is much appreciated. All right.
That's going to do it, yeah.
I guess that's it. Time to hit the old dusty trail. Actually, I guess I'll do my banter topic now. Nick, what? I got a Wii now, a Wii U, okay. And I'm playing Super Smash Brothers.
All right.
Way too many Fire Emblem characters. It's absurd. They're all over the place. But do we need Marth at this point, was my first thought.
Well, he's the main protagonist now. So.
No, Marth was the first protagonist, but he's, you know, well, yeah, he's been like a bunch of games since then.
He's the original, though. He's the one that people most associate with because he was.
American audience certainly don't.
They do because it was.
Well, it's because he was in fucking Fire Emblem, but now they're like, oh, and then there's Ike and Crom and Lucina and all these other characters who are also in the game, yet for some fucking reason, Marth's still in here with the same bullshit moveset, and Roy could be DLC. Like, I need a sixth Fire Emblem character in this game. I'm just saying, Nick, there are way too many fucking Fire Emblem characters in this game, and I was having a problem with how many Pokemon were in the game to begin with. I was like,
it's like Pikachu, Jigglypuff,
okay.
Charizard.
Pikachu, you gotta have him in there. He's the Pokemon. Jigglypuff, it's a kitschy pick for Melee, or no, even from the original, so yeah, that's... Yeah. It's amusing. Yeah, keep Jigglypuff in there.
Charizard.
Charizard's awesome. I'm so excited he's in there. He seemed like he should have been one in there from the beginning. I'm cool with that. Big bulky Pokemon to go with the fact the other two are kind of smaller, too.
Is Lucario still in
it? Yes, of course. Lucario replaced Mewtwo, gave him most of the same moveset.
Mewtwo's in it now.
Mewtwo's also DLC, of course, because you need Mewtwo and Lucario in the same game. Yeah, absolutely.
And Greninja.
Yeah, because that's what Smash Brothers needed. It needed another ninja character. It's already like three, but who cares? Yeah, sure, let's go with that.
I think that's all of them, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
So that's six.
That's a
party of Pokemon, Chris. That's the exact right amount.
It's too many. There's too many Pokemon in this fucking
game.
How
else am I going to go on my adventure through the Smash region?
You're going to have to go...
Where's Pichu? Pichu's a Pikachu clone!
Pichu's not in the game anymore, thankfully. Unless they fucking add him as DLC, too. If they're like, well, people really missed Pichu from the first game. With his much shittier moveset and the thunder that actually hurt him if it hit him. I'm just saying, there's too fucking many of these characters, Nick. All of Bowser's kids are fucking skins. It's ridiculous.
At least they're just skins.
Yeah, they're just skins. Let's pull it back from here forward. Less Pokemon. Get rid of Marth. Let's retire him. Let's put him out into the field like old Yeller. I'm like crying. I'm loading my shotgun. I'm like, you were a great old boy, but Shadow Dragon really sucked in a big one. Boom. And then boom, we add in the fucking Rayman. I don't know. I didn't come here with all the answers.